Today's Survivor Podcast is sponsored by Hover.com. Hover makes domain management simpler than a flame puzzle when someone else has already completed it standing next to you. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's another guy who is visualizing Jeff Probst saying his name, Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Rob Has a Podcast. It is Halloween, and we are very excited. We got a great show today. We are going to be talking with from Survivor Fans vs. Favorites 1. And Survivor Kara Moen. Here we're going to talk to Eric Reichenbach later on in the show. And then after we talk to Eric, we're going to be joined by our good friend Kurt Clark, who has prepared a Survivor Halloween-themed game for me to play. And then we are going to listen to your voicemails and talk about what the Survivors are saying on social media. So lots of fun. We are 7 episodes into this Survivor Blood versus Water, which I can't believe. But the time flies when you got a good Survivor season on your hands. So last night, Stephen Fishback and I, of course, got together for the Survivor Know-It-Alls, which we do every Wednesday night. And so Stephen and I talked about everything from this episode, and we really started to get into what we think is going to happen after the merge on that show. And then this morning, I spoke with Kat Ederson, and we talked about everything that Kat thought about this season and got into some interesting stuff, I thought at least, about what was going on in the first half of the game before the tribe swap and what the dynamics were on that tribe of returning players. So as always, you could check out those shows at robhasawebsite.com and subscribe to our Survivor podcast at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Now, speaking of this very podcast, if you had not heard, we are nominated for not one, but 2 podcast awards for 2013. So thank you guys so much for nominating us. I really, really appreciate all the support. We are nominated this year for the best video podcast and the best produced podcast of the year, believe it or not. So like last year, I want to throw out an incentive for you guys. And if you hadn't heard, what I plan to do is if we bring a podcast award back to Rob as a Podcast for the 2nd year in a row, I will put together the first ever Survivor roast of yours truly, and we will bring together some of the great friends of Rob as a Podcast, and hopefully we'll do this all live in one place and do the first ever Survivor roast, and you will see a bunch of your favorite Survivors making fun of me in one special podcast event that then I would put out there on YouTube and, of course, as a podcast. And it's also going to be potentially a live show that people can come and watch at a comedy club. So that's what we're trying to put out there. So if you want to help, if you want to see that happen, you could vote for Rob as a Podcast every day between November 1st and November 15th at podcastawards.com. You can only vote once a day, but if you want to set a little reminder to yourself, okay, let me get out my iPhone. Here's Siri. Set a daily reminder.
Okay, just tell me what you want to be reminded about.
Vote for Rob Has a Podcast for Podcast Awards.
Here's your reminder, starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. Shall I create it?
You better believe it, Siri.
I don't know what you mean by believe it,
Siri. All right. You get the idea.
Okay, I'll start reminding you.
All right. And maybe you have better luck with that. Now, you don't have to set a daily reminder, but I'd sure appreciate it if you did. And thanks so much for your getting us nominated. And let's see what happens at the Podcast Awards 2013. All right, let's get into talking to our guests. Now, of course, if you want to watch the video of this, this video is going to be on YouTube, on my YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. You could check out my Halloween costume that I'm wearing on the video as well if you want to check that out. And so let's get into it. And we have a very special treat for you guys today. It's not a trick. It is a treat. Here with us, he is a 2-time Survivor player from Survivor Fans vs. Favorites 1 and Survivor Fans vs. Favorites 2. Here he is. He's ready for Halloween. It's Eric Reichenbach. Oh my God. Oh, so scary, Eric.
I just ripped out of another face. Yeah, yeah, you took hot in there.
Face off. So, Eric, first off, let me say, happy Halloween.
Yep. Happy Halloween to you.
And congratulations on your engagement.
Yeah. Thank you. Two weekends ago, my fiance, Dana, is here with me. She's watching from the sidelines.
Hello, Dana, the future Mrs. Reichenbach.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
Yes.
But we're really excited. We're super excited. So. Yeah,
it was a big week. Not only did you get engaged, also Kanye West and Kim Kardashian and Aaron Lobdell.
Well, we're kind of the trendsetters. I think Stephen Fischbach pointed that out, that we set the trend. I think we were engaged the day prior to Kanye West. So we kind of set the stage there for them. I mean, they felt it was safe if we could do it.
once you got it out of the way. So what do you think of my pretty half-assed Halloween costume?
It's actually pretty nice. I was wondering who you were.
Well, hold on. Let me help you try it. For those of you guys who are watching the video, you don't know what I am. Let me open up. I got here. This is somebody left some coconut water around here. Let me.
That stuff is nowhere near as good as the real coconut.
Yeah, I have a very half-assed Tyson costume on today. So I was going to try to also do the podcast with one arm, but I couldn't. It would be too difficult.
It would.
So Eric, how are you doing?
Doing okay. Living in Michigan, working as an artist still. I'm doing a lot of comic book stuff. Recently came back from New York Comic Con, and I went to a Detroit Comic Con as well. I have a couple different comic books, so I've just been drawing a lot and just trying to put stuff out there.
I've got a lot of tweets from people. You know, we have all of the Rob Has a Podcast audience. Anytime anybody sees a survivor, they always contact me and say, hey, guess who I saw? I got a lot of people who saw you at New York Comic Con.
Oh, cool. We saw a lot of people. There was, I had my comic book out there. It's this one, Starving for Attention.
Yes, the fully legal Survivor parody.
Yeah, it makes fun of a reality show. I'm not sure which one, but it makes fun of that show. But we had a lot of people coming up to talk about that and buy that. So that was really cool. And then I have a couple other comics as well. But I was amazed. There's actually some crossover between comic book fans and Survivor fans.
Yeah, I think most things there's crossover between Survivor fans. Like Survivor, you know, there's so many people in all these different fields that like Survivor. You know, you could find Survivor fans in almost any different genre that you go into. But yeah, comic book fans, yeah. Definitely. And Eric, yeah. You were also the designer behind the Rob Has a Podcast official T-shirt, which was a lot of people really liked the design that you came up with. We sold over 200 Rob Has a Podcast T-shirts. And we also were collecting money for Autism Speaks. So we sold over 200 T-shirts. I'm going to round up the raising $1 for each shirt we were going to donate to Autism Speaks. So I'm going to round that up to an even $250 that we're going to donate to Autism Speaks. So your designs went to a good cause, Eric.
That's cool. I totally forgot about that because I'm already on to the next project. And Stephen Fischbach, I always talk to him about this. He says, "Wow, you're so industrious. Like, how are you doing so much?" And I'm like, "I don't know. It's pretty maddening. I don't even have a desk, and I have stuff everywhere." But I'm on to the next project. I think we're doing a Tata shirt next. Tata the Bushman.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what you meant by a Tata shirt. I thought that my mind went in a lot of different directions, Eric.
It's the Tata Bushman shirt from Tata Bushman on Twitter. So I think that's the next T-shirt design we're headed to. And it should be in the same vein as the Rob Has a Podcast shirt.
All right. And then Tata the Bushman, are you worried about, is he a litigious Bushman? Are you worried that he could be mad at you for infringing on his likeness?
No, he's in on it. Tata and Gloria, his wife, his 300-pound wife, are in on it.
Oh, it's the real guy? I thought that's a Twitter parody account.
Well, it is, but it's also Tata. Like, I also consider him Tata Bushman. I just call him that.
Okay, so it's not the actual guy from the Caramoan Islands.
No, but the shirt honors him.
Okay.
Great.
All right, well, let's get into Survivor Blood versus Water. And now, I know you have been following the season closely. You're also doing drawings every week for Stephen Fischbach's blog on People. What did you draw this week?
This week, actually, it was something about Eris and Vetus, who are so smug, because I know Steven's blog was about how smug Eris and Vetus think they are. I think they're running this game. So I think we made a super awesome picture of them. It just says, it's just the two brothers, and it says super awesome on it with a bunch of stars and glitter because they think they're so exciting. But it was really fun to make today. And it's what's really cool is after every single drawing, I have people commenting like, oh, you got to do this next week or you got to cover this. Like one of my favorites actually was with Tyson. It was the Coconut Bandits one. Like that was one of my favorite ones recently. I could even see that as a comic book in itself, just called Coconut Bandits, like with Tyson and Jervis.
Yeah. Now, Eric, you also last week, you wrote on Twitter, you said, hey, I need to come on the podcast because I want to talk about blindsides when it comes to Survivor. Wow. You were fired up. So here you go, Eric. This is your chance. What do you want to get off your chest about blindsides on Survivor?
Well, it's just, I think it was like the third episode in the row. I can't even remember now who it was. I want to say it was Kat. Maybe
yeah,
it was the one
Kat last week.
It was Kat, and everybody's like, oh, another huge blindside. And I'm like, you know what? You get to a point where you can't have, like, there's a reason it's called a blindside. It's because the person doesn't see it coming. And I mean, it's just ridiculous that it's now, oh, this is another blindside. No, it's not a blindside. Like, you should not promote a blindside if it's not really that's what it is. And I feel like it's been forced. Like, the last couple episodes, it's been really forced.
Well, I feel like they shouldn't even promote that it's a blindside because it's supposed to be a surprising thing. And if I know it's a blindside, I know who's going home. Like when you tell me on the commercial, like this week on Survivor, it's a blindside. You'll never see it coming. It's like, well, now I know the person who I think is going to go home is not going to go home. And another person is going to go home. So, you can't promote a blindside or a twist ending or anything like that. That's no good. So do you feel like that this has become a problem with the show just this season, or you feel like going back through Survivor Karamoan and previous seasons too?
I mean, it's kind of like a point of interest. It's like, oh, it's like we're going to use this as the gimmick to make you watch the show. It's like there's a blindside. Make sure to watch this episode. Well, everybody kind of gets duped in a way. Like, I think it's just a promotional thing. Like, you'll see it on the commercial or you'll hear somebody say it, but it just gets to a point where it's ridiculous. I mean, blindsides are better, like what you said, when the audience is taken aback too. Like, the audience doesn't see it coming. Like, that's just as fun as if the person doesn't see it coming who's getting voted out. So in my eyes, it should be more of a, you know what, let's try and make this so unbiased. Like, you never know who's going to go home. Like, I would love to see, like, if I love this guy, but like, let's say Tyson got voted off next episode. Like his story arc is kind of predictable. We've kind of seen it start to grow. Like, if Tyson went home next week, or even Hayden went home next week, like, I would be amazed. I'd be like, whoa. Like, so to me, it's more a problem of editing.
Mm-hmm. Now we see with Tyson's brother, Vetus, Otis's brother, Vetus. So he is in this group with all the women, and he got switched over there, not unlike the position that you have been in your Survivor playing career, when you were on Survivor Karamoan, I'm sorry, Survivor Fans vs. Favorites 1, you were the only person left with all the women, except that for some reason, all the women want to keep Vetus around, and it was the opposite with you. How come Vetus gets to be the only guy that gets to hang around?
Vetus is actually doing really well at keeping everybody under control on the tribe, like kind of staying in touch with everybody's relationships. Like what he said, I mean, every tribal council, he's schooled everybody because he's earned enough trust that he can talk his, like trust is his selling point. He says, you can trust me. And so that's what's been keeping him around. So he's had a really good selling point. The first time I was on the show, I think they were all too smart. I think all the women I was with were just too intelligent. They were too strategic. They were like, oh, we like Eric. Because after the game, they all still like me. Like, we were all still friends. But they were just too strategic. They knew better. If the women on Vetus's tribe knew better, they'd just get rid of him. Because him and Eris are too, they're a huge liability.
Yeah, it's a very threatening pair. Do you feel like that the Biskauskas brothers are aligned with Tina and her daughter? And we've talked about this a lot. Which side of this are you on? Do you think that the two pairs are working together? Or do you think that is just there's not enough evidence to support that?
It's possible. We're not shown enough to really know that, I think, or we're not shown enough sides that. I could see it happening though, just out of they're kind of like the two last major pairs left in the game. I mean, Tina though could win. Like, Tina's really likable. She doesn't really ruffle too many feathers. She's just hanging out. Like, Tina or her daughter could win over Eris and Vetus, I feel. But they're all four of those people are very likable. They're all extremely likable. So it's like, if the other remaining players don't get together and say those four are a problem, then they're going to walk to the end probably.
Now, your Survivor experience is unique in that you've played two times, and both times you played in a season where it's a bunch of people who have played the game before versus a bunch of people who have not played the season before. And this season, for me, is almost like Fans versus Favorites 3, because we have a tribe of people who are returning players versus people who've never played the game before. Do you think that this is a... Is it an even playing field, because the history of this has not been good for people who have never played before?
Right. This season's really interesting, though. That family dynamic is huge. And also the fact that they kind of have, like, I guess on Fans versus Favorites, you had fans, some fans of the show who knew it, but they had never played it. This is kind of the same thing in a way. So I guess you are right. Like, the family member who has not played before is kind of like a Survivor fan coming in, where they hear all about it and they see it, but they've never experienced it. So in a way, it is kind of like a Fans versus Favorites. I would agree with that. In terms of the game, though, I mean, it depends based on the player. Like, you saw Rupert immediately, like, he's like, oh, I don't care about, like, it's not that he doesn't care about the game. He cares about his wife more. Mm-hmm. So he made a very stupid strategic decision, but a right decision in his eyes.
Eric, if you were on Survivor Blood versus Water 2 with your fiance and soon to be wife Dana, and she was voted out, would you take her place?
Oh yeah, I would.
Okay.
I totally would. And the reason why 2 is, I think it's actually a dual reason. One, I think it's the right thing, it's the right decision to do. And two, I think I'm pretty competitive. I think I would have more fun doing the challenges and cut out all the strategic nonsense.
Yeah.
Just take that route. And I think Dana denies this all the time. She would be an excellent player. Would play great. The elements would be her biggest problem, like dealing with the starvation and the hunger. But I think she's great. I think socially she would be amazing. I would totally switch with her. And I think it's the right decision to make, and it's a good strategic decision to make.
Yeah, because you don't like the strategic part of the game. That was one of the things from last season, where a lot of people said that you didn't really want to be in on the scheming. A lot of people said that you would say, hey, 5 minutes, 10 minutes before we go to tribal council, just tell me what to do. You wanted to try to play a clean game. And so for you, hey, send me to Redemption Island. I'll hang out there. I'll win the challenges. Almost like what Ozzy was able to do a couple of weeks. That's right. Appealing to you.
Right. Ozzy did the exact same thing. Ozzy said, I don't want to deal with the game. I'm just going to try this method. Is there somebody here?
No, Eric has a, is it a trick or treater?
I think so. Yeah. Anyway. But the other thing, oh crap, I just lost my chain of thought. The other thing that I was going to say is that on my season, a lot of people said, oh yeah, Eric doesn't want to play the strategic element. I did feel like I played it to a great extent. I just tried to limit the variables. Like, I couldn't do what Cochran did. I like take all the circumstances and ideas and all the different ways that you could think through the game and all the alliances and compile them and manage them. So I just minimized them. I said, I don't want to hear about it until we go to the vote, and then I can make a decision. So in a way, I tried to minimize the variables, like simplify this very complex social game into who are the two sides voting for. So being like a swing vote to me made it easier. I could make one decision as opposed to multiple decisions on character and people and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Well, I think there is, I mean, it's definitely is something that is, you know, doesn't, people will never look at you as, oh my God, this guy's scheming too much. And that is a thing. We saw that's why Kat ended up going home this last week, because people said she was over scheming. And that's definitely a pitfall to avoid. So You know, I don't look at it as, you know, a black or white thing of like, this is, you know, this is always the right strategy, always the wrong strategy. I think you got to play what works for you.
Right. And that's the other thing people don't understand. There's so many personalities that go into that game. Like, there's so many different people that play differently. And a lot of people are like, oh, why didn't you play like this? Like Parvati, Russell, Boston Rob are the three that I think everybody thinks of like, oh, that's how you play Survivor. And to a great extent, that's how you play Survivor and win. But other people have won with perfectly, perfectly good strategies that were different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, there's no right answer for how you win Survivor. I want to talk about the idea that Tyson has put forth here over these last couple episodes, where Tyson is getting a crew together and he wants to take out Otis. Now, I know you think he's smug and you would like to see Otis taken down, right?
Anyway, I mean, Eris just thinks he's going to win, and he may win. And it's just nutso that he's just kind of having this cakewalk. I really like Tyson this season. I did not like Tyson the previous couple seasons. I really like him this season. Like, I get his humor this time around. I understand he's playing a really good game. His interactions with his girlfriend showed that he's a super nice guy. So my opinion of Tyson is pretty high, and I think he can win it if he makes the right decision.
So let's talk about this. Is it the right decision? Now, you've seen some major power shifts happen in your time on Survivor. Of course, everybody remembers when Ozzy got taken out right after the merge on Survivor Fans versus Favorites 1. You were also there for the whole thing with you know, taking out Philip and everything that happened there. So you've seen sort of these post-merge shakeups go down. Do you think it's too early for Tyson to be trying to take out Otis before we even get to a merge?
No. I mean, as soon as Eris and Vetus get together, it's going to be deadly, because Vetus has his own thing going on with the women tribe. They're going to be the power players. He's absolutely right. He's reading the situation correctly and saying, this is the problem down the road. For instance, when Ozzy left on Micronesia, that was the best time to take him out. His ego was huge. He thought he could do no wrong. I mean, he stepped out of a challenge. He felt so confident. That challenge, there was a challenge where he had to hold her arm up, and he left for donuts. And afterwards, he was like, I just wanted some donuts, man. I'm fine. I think I'm safe. There's no, like, Suri and them pounced on that. So right now is the time to take out one of the brothers, at least one of them. They're going to be so, you can't stop them. You're not going to be able to stop them later, I don't think.
But if you're Tyson, and there, people will look at you potentially as somebody who is the biggest threat, isn't there some value to keeping a bigger threat in the game?
There is, but I mean, Eris on his own can fight just as hard. Hayden on his own can fight. There's other threats out there. It's not just Eris and Vetus. And secondly, they're two together. Like, it's numbers. It's kind of a, it's like a guaranteed alliance of two. They're not going to vote against each other. So to me, it's the biggest target, but there's other targets.
Yeah. What do you think the fallout ends up being when somebody blindsides the other one's loved one? Because what the way that the game has been so far, it's, you know, the loved ones have been separate and the returning players have been separate. So it's all like returning players on returning players and vice versa. Everything right. is very separate. So now right. if there's a vote and Aris or Vetus gets blindsided, then you go back to camp with not just somebody who was in your alliance, but somebody, it's like, WTF, you voted out my brother? Like, I thought we were friends. Like,
you have that baggage left. So that actually is something that, to me, gives evidence to why not vote him out before the merge, so you don't have to deal with that situation.
Well, it'll be, it looks like next week we're going to have the merge. So everything's going to be post-merge now. And I think that another interesting dynamic here is, let's say next week we have the merge and Otis gets blindsided, okay? And now he goes to Redemption Island, and now he could win the duel and give the clue to the hidden immunity idol to Vetus.
Yes, he could. And then the thing that happens there is what happens there is he has to do what Malcolm did on Karamoan, and basically play that thing every single tribal council. He has to both find it and play it every single tribal council because of the target it puts on you.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's something I did in my strategy on pretty much every season. People always were like, oh, why don't you go look for the idol? You're really good at like wandering around in the woods aimlessly. Why don't you go find the idol? I never wanted to find the idol. It's a target. And especially in a season with returning players, they all know like, oh, if anybody has a clue to an idol, they're going to find it. We have to vote for them. We have to flush it or get rid of it or put them on the spot to use it. Because it's such a pressure cooker. Like as soon as I had the clue, I was like, you know what? I don't want it. I'm going to misuse it anyway. If I don't find the clue, if I don't find the hidden idol today, I'm going to probably go home tonight just because I have the clue in my hand. So to me, it was like a hot potato. And I think that's how it goes on a season with returning players. They know this is not, that's why Monica's been burning it every time. She doesn't want that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it. A lot of people say, you're an idiot. You should use everything you have. I'm sorry. I'm not Russell Hance. I can't find it perfectly every time. I'm only going to be able to find it so much. And then my time's run out.
Well, I think that there is a balance to it. And I think it also depends on what your position in the game is. If you're not a target, then having the idol can only make you a target. You know, ideally you'd want to do, if you had the idol, you wouldn't want anybody to know that you have it. And then in this format, everybody knows you have the clue. Like it used to be for a while, like they'd have like the clue to the hidden immunity idol would just be like, you'd go to a challenge and be under your napkin. Like, okay, I'll put this.
Right. I like that. I like that method as opposed to this open forum stuff.
Or it's like in the jar of coffee or something like that. And it's like, okay, well, nobody knows I have the clue. And now let me go find the idol and nobody knows I have the idol. And then it's a lot of like, I think that makes for a little bit more of an exciting tribal council because you never know. You can put the votes on somebody, you don't know they have an idol. And that's exciting. But going back to Otis and Vetus, like, do you think we could see a potential scenario where Otis is voted out, he's on Redemption Island, he's winning the challenge every single week, giving the clue to Vetus every single week, who's finding the idol every single week, and they can't get Otis out of the game on Redemption Island, and they can't get Vetus out of the game because he keeps having the immunity idol.
That would be ideal. That would be an amazing show. If that would, that is rare if that would happen, but I could totally see that happening. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because that's the idol, I think, is going to come into play at some point. Someone is going to, like, either Monica is going to get voted out at some point, so we can't give it to Monica anymore, or someone else is going to win at Redemption and be able to give it to somebody else. The idol is going to come into play eventually, and whenever it does, it's fireworks. Like, either someone makes a mistake or someone makes a great play. So that's kind of, that's the purpose of the Hidden Immunity Idol, really, is to create more in the game, create more fireworks, I guess.
Oh, yeah. So we could have a lot of fireworks here after the merge on Survivor Blood versus Water. So somebody's coming back into the game next week. First off, do you like the idea of somebody coming back in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that. I mean, you've earned it. I mean, how many people? I mean, John's been doing awesome. He's been doing great there. Like, I saw him hack through that rope the other day like a maniac. That was amazing what he just did. So, yeah, they deserve to come back in the game at that point. I think it's a good idea, and it also shakes things up.
Yeah. So who do you think of these three people? You got John, you got Laura M, and now Laura B. Who's your odds-on favorite? Who's coming back into the game next week?
John. John's got it. But you know what? I think it's going to be a challenge where you have to wait and hold a pose.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a fair challenge. They always talk about fairness in the challenges. And this kind of when you have two women and a man, they have to make it fair. It can't be a simple strength competition because John would win. And it can't be some other type of challenge that John would lose, like some type of balance challenge. So I'm guessing it's going to be a time limit challenge where they have to stand and hold a pose for a certain amount of time. I still think, though, John is favored to come out of that.
Do you think that they could make it a challenge that Laura B would be favored to win?
It's possible. I mean, there are.
What would that challenge be?
It would be the one where you have to hang on to a pole for a long time, use upper body strength, but it's more of a weight disposition thing. It's got to be a willpower challenge because that's the only way to make a challenge fair between all the people involved, between the two Lauras and John.
Okay, so we'll see. Somebody's coming back into the game. This is going to be exciting. We'll see. Let's talk about Kat got a lot of airtime last night about her thing.
Yeah.
She was very upset, Eric, because she said that she was worried that her boyfriend, it was going to be embarrassing for him because nobody wants to date somebody who doesn't make the merge. Now, I know you're off the market. Is this a thing, Eric?
It's just, I mean, I don't, that comment is really funny and I understand why it made it into the episode. But really, it's not, if you're in a relationship together, like that kind of thing shouldn't be a problem. Like it shouldn't be like, you should love somebody unconditionally no matter where they make it. I think Kat was just really depressed. She thought she was going to do well. Most second timer, like I know going into my second time, I was like, you know what, you got to try your best. But if you don't, you got to come to terms with it. I mean, this is a second chance at something. People only get one chance at usually. So you really got to look at it that way. I think she was just very depressed, and she really thought that Hayden, somebody who is really strategic, a great strategic player, obviously on Big Brother, he did very well. She wanted to show him that she could hang, that she could do it. And I think that was just, that's kind of what's encapsulated in that statement of just, what's my worth if I can't even make it this far?
See, I feel like you and Kat really approached your second time both like quite differently, even though you said, circumstances that were similar in that you both like went pretty far into the game the first time. I think you were fifth on your first time. I think she was seventh, but both of you guys ended up being tricked. Of course, you with the hidden immunity idol. Her, she thought she was with a final three with Kim, and both ended up getting, a blindside. And so, whereas I feel like Kat came into her second time around, hey, I want to change my story. I'm going to show everybody like how I'm going to play hard like Kim. I feel like you came back your second time and you said, hey, I'm going to disengage from the strategic, tricky part of the game because I don't want to get involved with that.
Well, I totally agree with you. I think Kat came back thinking like, oh, I should take pointers from Kim or other people and play harder. My approach was you can't play hard. If you try to play hard, you give away immunity necklaces. So don't do that. So basically my viewpoint was I reflected on it and I said, you could play strategy, but you're not natural at it. And you could I have trouble telling people like I'm going to vote you out or I want to vote this person out. I would be more of a follower or more of a listener. So I said, you know what? Don't pretend to be something you're not. Okay. Go into it like how you think you would do better and with the knowledge from the past. Kat went into it, I think, too hard, too strong. And I mean, it might not have been her thing. Maybe she was going to be better off doing something like what Tyson did, like waiting a little bit longer and then talking to more people that you trust or I don't know, going with the flow while she has a good alliance instead of shaking things up.
Now, Eric, you said that you would have a problem with telling people that they're going to be voted out. Now, obviously, we know Laura Boneham does not have a problem with telling people that they're going to be voted out. Now, did you think that was that a big deal, what she did last night, that she told Vetus for the group, hey, Vetus, you're the one going home?
That's a huge faux pas. Like, that's not okay. Like, it, exactly what everybody said. You build it on trust. You don't go against everybody and tell somebody. But even if she did, even if she still felt a moral obligation to, she should have told him in private. She should have gone to him in private and said, listen, I'm going to help you right now, but you really got to watch my back. But the whole thing was a bad idea. The whole thing was a bad idea. And that's what Survivor is. It's not a game about morality, about doing the right thing. It's about knowing people and understanding people and the dynamics of them. And that's something like, you could like, Vetus was actually playing a card there by being so charismatic. He was so charismatic in a way that he got Laura to give that information to him. Like he basically coaxed that information out of her with the relationship and the trust he formed with her. So to me, that was bad on Laura and good on Vetus. I mean, that was Vetus's hard work paying off.
Well, I feel like it's always a fundamental decision on Survivor of, the person who's going home, do we tell them or do we not tell them? And if you decide to tell them, how do you do that? Or is it better to blindside somebody? And it's, you know, it's something that comes up every single vote. Like, there's, you know, a lot of times there's a decision made and it's sort of like going all the way back from going to early Survivor where Lex was one of the people that he always like, hey, I'm going to sit you down, buddy. I got to tell you, hey, it's you. I just want you to know that. I don't want you to be blindsided. Right. Eric, what in your time on the show, would you have preferred to have let somebody know that they were going home, or do you prefer just to not have that awkward conversation?
It's a super awkward conversation. But it depends on the player, because there are some people who are so like, they're so down and out that they won't do anything. It's really, you have to know that person. So for instance, you would not tell Malcolm you're going home. Like, you would never go to Malcolm and say, we're voting for you tonight. You would never tell Malcolm, because Malcolm would scramble his ass off and find a way to do a miracle to make himself stay. Eddie, on the other hand, from Karamoan, we told Eddie pretty much every single day, we're going to vote you off. Because we knew Eddie wasn't going to do anything. Eddie just didn't, he wasn't interested in that. So you kind of have to know the person. Like, when she told Vetus that, Vetus is the kind of personality who was like, no way, I'm not going, I'm not going to leave. So, I mean, if you even reversed it, if Vetus told Laura that, like, let's say Laura was going to go home, and which she did, and Vetus told her, like, you're going to go home, Laura possibly might not do anything. She might just say, okay, I get it. Another person who did that, I think in One World, I cannot remember her name now. Towards the end, it was like the weirdest tribal council where Kim basically told this girl, you're going, and she was fine with it. She was like, I think it's fine. I'll be okay. You can vote me off. And they voted her off. And it was like the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I cannot remember her name now. She lives in LA.
Was it Christina Cha?
It was. That's who it is.
Yes. There you go.
Yes. They basically told her, we're voting you off, and she was fine with it.
I think she was sort of like, hey, I'm in fifth place is pretty good, right?
Yeah. She's like, okay, I'm cool with this. And Jeff Probst was literally like shooting himself in the head, like off to the side, like cannot believe that this is happening right now.
Yeah. Last night we had Tyson was talking about how great life is. And of course, I have to say, Tyson knows what he's talking about with this coconut water. It's really, really delicious.
It is.
Do you like the strategy? I know you, one of the reasons why that you were complaining at the end of last season was that you were so hungry. You were so hungry that you were wasting away. Were you a coconut bandit?
Yeah. I was finding every coconut I could. I mean, and there's even a forest that we called the Forbidden Forest that was kind of on the edge of camp, like starting to get towards civilization, where it's like, do not go to the Forbidden Forest. Like, you're not allowed to go there. And I was jumping fences to get in there and find coconuts. Like, I would go anywhere. Like, you saw me. I climbed the tree. I climbed that damn tree. And I would have kept going if I wouldn't have died from falling from it. But
it was very dangerous.
The hunger is insane. It's just insanity, and I can't think straight without some food.
Yeah. So Tyson has said this season that the correct strategy is to, you know, basically eat everything that you can find and eat all of the rice that they've been rationed. And I actually debated this with my tribe mates during Survivor All-Stars, and I lost that debate. But I still think my point was the correct one. Do you agree with Tyson that, let's say you have a camp, you have a limited supply of rice, is the right move to ration that rice or eat as much as you can until it's gone?
It goes both ways, because I remember we were eating all the rice because certain people in my camp for Karamoan were saying we should eat as much as we can. And we were eating five meals a day, which I think is excessive. And it filled us up, but at the same time, when we eventually ran out of rice for those few days in between, it was just awful. It was agonizing. I mean, we got to a point where we did run out of rice. It was awful. And, I mean, it wasn't awful for the young girls running around, or it wasn't awful for Philip, who had stores of body fat. For me and my metabolism, it was awful. Like, I was crushed. I agree with Tyson, eat as much as you can and eat it. But afterwards, I'm like, oh, this is a problem for future Eric. Like, oh, future Eric will figure this out. So I agree and I disagree at the same time. It's just weird. You're so hungry. You don't make rational decisions.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. There is a middle ground. I don't think you should be gluttonous, but I do think the right move is, you know, to eat, you know, within reason, and don't like ration it, because you could ration, and then you're not in the game on day 20, you know?
Right.
Or then you have a situation where it's like, okay, we ration, and like, oh, great, it's a merge. Now everybody's here eating our rice. And it's like, right. Well, you could have been, you know, saving your own strength and eat, you know, in eating the rice. And I actually feuded about this with in Survivor All-Stars when I was on the tribe with Boston Rob and Amber and Alicia. And Amber and Alicia, who were in Survivor Australia, they ran out of rice and they were like, oh my God, it was so horrible. But I said, well, just eat. Let's just eat, because there's going to be more people here eventually. We're going to have less, you know, get more into your system while we have it. But they didn't like my idea. And
it's a touchy subject. Some people are called, right, we called them the rice Nazis, and they were like, we have to eat this amount or else, or this day. So that the food becomes an issue for bigger issues too. Like if somebody's mad at somebody for no, like, and they don't have a legitimate reason, they end up arguing over rice. Like rice became the argument of everything.
Yeah. Who were the rice Nazis that you played with?
What was her name? I want to say her name is Laura from Karamoan.
Oh,
no, wait, it's not Laura. It's the other one. She's the race car driver. I cannot remember the name of her right now.
Yeah, I believe that was, I think that's, no.
Laura was not the race car driver.
That wasn't, that wasn't her. Oh, now I feel.
Funny.
Yeah. Julia.
Thank you.
Yes.
Julia, I believe the fans at least said that she was a right Nazi. At least Reynolds said that. But I never had played with her, but people said, oh yeah, she was a rice Nazi. Other than that, I think after that, it was over. I think on Karamoan, to some extent, Suri said, we need to keep our rations rational, which was a running joke.
Okay. Let me see. Eric, besides Tyson, is there anybody else that's jumping out at you that you think is playing a really good game this time around?
What do you think? Who do you think is playing a good game?
Okay.
Oh, Dana. Okay. Dana is not interested. I wanted to know who she thought. I think Hayden is playing an excellent game. And he doesn't need Kat necessarily to play a good game. I think he's going to be fine. I think Hayden's going to do fine. I can't believe people haven't voted him out already, because he already won. He won Big Brother. Like, do people not know that?
Do you watch Big Brother?
Hayden won Big Brother. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I was asking, do you watch Big Brother? I take it no. If you're asking me if Hayden won.
No. I see like an episode here and there, but I don't watch Big Brother. No.
Yeah. Eric, I want to let's jump into some questions that we have for you from the Rob Has a Podcast audience. Of course, these questions come to us from our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/Rob Has a Podcast, and also on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/RHAP. I know you're a big Redditor, right? You're on the Survivor Reddit a lot.
Yeah, I didn't know there was an RHAP Reddit. That's
cool. We started it a couple of weeks ago. Now, you did a Ask Me Anything after the season was over on Reddit, right? And yeah. Which I thought was pretty cool. But you felt like it seemed like, and I read through it, pretty quickly. I don't remember any passages, but you seemed a little down on the, whoa, look at that light came on. You seemed a little down on the show at that time. Did you have a positive experience on Survivor Karamoan?
Yeah, it was wonderful. The experience itself was great. I definitely was bitter after the reunion. The reunion soured a lot of it, just because of how it was handled. And I was a little sad that the editing didn't show enough either of my own contributions. And it was so heavily focused on Philip and Cochran. And they didn't show any of other people as well. Like, they could have shown so much more of Brenda. They could have shown so much more better qualities in Dawn. I think Dawn had some redeeming qualities. She wasn't totally a sob factory. But there were other people on there that they really should have focused on more, and instead it was eclipsed by this over-the-top Brandon and Philip drama that was endlessly happening. So I was very bitter after the reunion. And then over time, though, I've kind of been like, you know what? They have a TV show. I get it. It has to be entertaining. Just calm down a little bit more. But yeah, I was very down on the show.
All through the season, you seemed to not be a huge Philip fan. Was there anything in particular about Philip that really got under your skin?
Philip in general, just he was playing a character, and I didn't really realize that till later, not till after the show was done. Even a couple months after the show was over, I didn't really realize how much of a character Philip was playing. Philip is probably a decent human being, who's sane and logical, but while I was there, he was the most difficult person to work with. I mean, every single thing, every single talk with him was, he would talk down to you, tell you what to do, act irrational. He was almost like just this bear that would like wander out of the woods and grumble at people. And then every once in a while, when he was feeling good enough, he would expound random pieces of knowledge that no one cared to know or hear before. So he was a very strange character, and I never really got along with him. And then after the show was over, I kind of realized and started to talk to him more, and I realized how much of a character, how much of a presence he had, and how he wanted to use that in the game. And that was kind of his strategy.
How about during Hansageddon? Were you scared at all? Now, you were friends with Brandon, so you didn't have to worry about him peeing in your rice or anything like that. But was that actually a scary situation when that all went down?
It wasn't so much scary. It was scary before, because
I would have been scared. I would have been pretty scared.
We had paranoia all before that, because there were moments, there were sincere moments where you would look over and you saw it like it was Friday the 13th. Like there's thunder, like the thunder flashes, like lightning flashes, and you see him staring out into space, like despondent, like, oh my God, what's going on with this guy in his head? Like you didn't know where he was coming from. And that was the most scary, unpredictable thing. And every other day he would talk to me, because I talked to him quite a bit, about like he wanted to burn the camp down, he wanted to like destroy the shelter entirely, he wanted to throw the pot up on a rock, he wanted to bend the machete so nobody could use it, and how funny that would be because it would make L cuts instead of straight cuts. And he was talking about peeing and everything, and peeing on people's things, and basically urinating all over everything. It was like this terrifying lead up, and then we were like, he's gonna break. Like we kind of all knew he was gonna break, but nobody wanted to admit it or say it because it might prompt it. And when he did finally break, we just hid the machete because we were worried about that. We just said, hide the machete. That's pretty valuable. And we don't want him to have it. Mm-hmm. And then after that was done, it was kind of over. We were like, okay, we can all relax. We can all breathe a sigh of relief. Like, it's over. It's finally ended.
Yeah.
But leading up to it, it was more paranoia. It was kind of more like a Cold War situation, like the threat of world destruction until it happened.
Right. How much of it was that you were actually friends with Brandon, and how much of it was you were just afraid that if you weren't his friend, he would kill you?
I genuinely liked Brandon. I thought he was misunderstood. I think a lot of people give him a lot less credit. They think, oh, he's just stupid. Like, who cares? He's all messed up. Like, he's a loser. I don't think any of that's accurate. I think he just has some problems that he needs to work through, and he has some difficult things that have happened in his life that have shaped his worldview. I have nothing but compassion for him. I want him to find the answers that he's looking for and figure out his life.
It's 3:00.
But did you just hear that, by the way?
I heard it. Yeah, 3:00.
My computer said it's 3:00 in a female voice.
Whoa.
What? Yeah. And Dana's computer says it's 3:00 in like a Pierce Brosnan kind of voice. It's something funny we do. Our computers have a male voice for her computer and a female voice for my computer. It's just some weird relationship thing we have.
There you go. Well, if it works.
Anyway, I give Brandon a lot more credit than I think a lot of other people do. I mean, Corinne just said, die, burn in a fire to Brandon. Like, she had no worth in Brandon. And I feel bad for the guy. I want him to sort out his life and figure it out. Whether or not he was going to kill me, that also was a concern as well. But I don't think he would have. I don't think he would have done anything that he would have regretted that bad. I don't think he would have punched somebody or bit somebody or something crazy like that.
If you had to be murdered, would you want to be murdered on Survivor or would you rather be murdered in private?
On Survivor.
Yeah, I think so. That's probably a big YouTube clip after the fact.
You know what? That would be pretty epic, and it would probably be by tribesmen. Like, tribesmen would come out of the woods because I wandered into the wrong area, and that's what would happen. Mm-hmm. That would be nutso.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want my family there to see that. That would be agonizing for them.
So you'd rather be murdered on a not blood versus water season?
That's tough. You know what? Blood versus water would be like TMZ material. Like, it would be everywhere. Like, it'd be so like intertwined. Like, and then Dana would be there and she would be like, my boyfriend was just murdered. Like, what would happen then? Like, she'd have to scratch someone's eyes out or something, or like take someone down.
Yeah. Promo department would be very excited about all this. Next time on Survivor, one of the survivors is murdered. Find out.
Be terrifying. Mm-hmm. You know what? It could be a mystery too. Like, someone just wanders off. I don't know. It would be awful. Any way you look at it.
Yeah. Oh, and they could do a tie in to Whodunit. That would be great. Get Giles out there.
It's not more anymore who wins the million. It's who wins the million and who goes to jail.
Yeah. So let's see. Let me keep going with a few more Caramoan questions. This is from Brian Scally. He wants to know, what did Cochran do to differentiate his game from Dawn's that was so significant enough to win unanimously? Now, a lot of people were very, very hard on both Dawn and Sherry in the final tribal council. You especially were very hard on Sherry during that final tribal council. But what was so different about Cochran's game versus Dawn's game?
Dawn got crucified just because I think Dawn's presence in the game created so much paranoia and so much anxiety and stress that was unneeded, that was undesirable, that people felt the need to punish Dawn. I mean, even if Dawn wasn't part of their vote out, we all kind of felt the need, like, Dawn needs to be punished for what she brought to the game. And that really kind of crucified her, is the way she handled Survivor, the way she played Survivor. And Sherry, to a lot of extent, did the same thing. I was kind of nice to Sherry in that I actually asked her a question, because nobody else asked Sherry a question. Everybody else said, Sherry, and then they just let it be quiet. They just kind of walked off. So finally, I dropped the mic
at Tribal Council?
Pretty much. And I kind of went to Sherry and I said, Sherry, like, do you know why people aren't talking to you? Do you know why people don't care to ask a question? And she's like, I have absolutely no idea. And I was like, because you didn't do anything, Sherry. Like, you didn't make any plays. You didn't do anything. You just kind of floated along. And she got really mad at that and told me to sit down. But that actually, I had to talk to Cochran after that. So I told her I couldn't sit down right now. I have to talk to Cochran. Editing kind of mixed that around a little bit. But Sherry ultimately didn't do much. She didn't do anything strategically. And a lot of the time she just kind of came off as annoying because she asked a lot of questions, a lot of questions.
So let me see. How about Ruben Holtz wants to know, who would have won Survivor Caramoan if it would have been you in the final three with Dawn and Sherry instead of Cochran?
Dawn and Sherry. Would have been Dawn and then possibly me after Dawn, just because Dawn made a lot of good plays. I think people would have been able to overlook that, all the annoyances and all the chaos Dawn created, and say she played a good game.
You don't think you would have won in that scenario? Like, you wouldn't have gotten, I mean, we know you would have gotten Brenda's vote.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. What about Malk and Andrea and Eddie and Reynolds?
Probably Eddie's. I would have got Eddie's vote, probably. Probably not Andrea's, just because I kind of helped screw her over when we voted her out. Like, we didn't give her the heads up on we're voting for you tonight when she had an idol in her pocket.
You need Laura Bonham, yeah.
But, I mean, I would have had a chance, but I think I would have had a lot of tough time pleading my case. Something to consider for, even if there's a future survivor for me, if not, whatever, but if there is a future survivor for me, it's something to consider that my end game was not solid at all. I don't know how I would have done it that last tribal council, because I would have said stuff like, oh, I tried not to play the game because I wanted to limit variables. Like, people would have been like, You dumbass. You were just lazy. You were just lazy. And it would have been a very hard sell, mm-hmm. I think. Dawn actually would have done things where she could point to and say, I did this, morally right or wrong, who knows, but I did it.
What was the final three that you were, what in your head that you were trying to get there with?
The final three for me was going to be myself, Dawn, and Brenda.
Okay.
And it was not entirely a strategic decision because I feel like Brenda would have won hands down because she was so well liked. But I would have wanted to be there with Brenda because we were good friends. And I also wanted to be there with Dawn because myself, Dawn, and Brenda were all pretty close. And we were close from very early on. So to me, it was more of a us three work together. We deserve to be in the end together. And that, I think, would have been a pretty close vote, what with Brenda probably winning.
Let's talk about the finale of Survivor Karamoan. And so Jeff McGinnis wants to know, how awkward was it having all of the pre-merge folks sit in the audience at the finale last year? Should Survivor keep doing that going forward? Now, you were upset about this. You didn't like this.
No, that was crap. That was pretty bad. We talked because there's always a dress rehearsal before the live finale. And we're getting ready. And everybody walks up on stage from after the merge. And then I'm waiting for them to have the next people come up. But then they just go sit in the audience. And I'm like, okay, that's a little strange. Like, maybe they don't have this chair set up. Like, they didn't really tell anybody what was going on. And then Jeff goes, okay, we're going to do mic check now. And I'm looking around like, are they serious? Are they really going to be in the audience? And immediately, like, after Jeff starts doing mic check, he's talking to people out in the audience. And I think Allie was one of the first to speak up, like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we dressed up. Our families are in town. Like, our families flew out for this. We don't even get a spot on the stage. Like, are you kidding me? And Jeff gave us a bunch of lines about, oh, the stage isn't big enough or whatever. But it was all just fluff. Like, they weren't going to put him on the stage. And nobody really knows why, if they're just not important enough to be on the stage. But I think Corinne would have been great on stage. She would have had a ball up there. And even Shamar, like, I wanted to hear from him. To me, it's just poor taste. It's in bad form. It's in poor taste. It doesn't follow tradition, and it doesn't support the basics of what Survivor is about, which is a bunch of people living on an island together and the social dynamics of it.
Now, the finale for Survivor Karamoan was a little odd in a number of different ways. We heard from Boston Rob. We also heard from, like, random people who were just Malcolm fans. We talked to Rudy. Yeah. So you didn't get a question, right? You didn't. They didn't ask you anything, right?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Obviously, you don't agree with this idea of the format either, right?
No. I think it's just because they wanted to shape stories. They wanted to make Malcolm look like this hero, so they had a lot of people talking about Malcolm. I mean, they're clearly giving airtime to people that are more important or less important. Well, more important people get more airtime, less important people get less. And I mean, even the Dawn Brenda thing was so forced. Like I still don't think that was a legitimate apology through the Skype call between Brenda and Dawn, like, that went on. I mean, we could have spent more time on that and talked about it with other people, like what other people thought about it. Like, what did Corinne think about the Dawn situation? Like, what did Mike think about that? Like, there's all these other people that could have chimed in on it, and we didn't hear any of that. Like, we just focused on this fluff.
So did you feel like the apology was accepted?
I don't think it was. I don't think it was genuine. I don't think the apology was, no.
So
it was too big of a slight. I think what happened between Dawn and Brenda is too big for that kind of apology, I guess.
Eric, is your fiance photobombing us?
No.
She might be. She's over here.
I'm Snapchatting.
Oh, okay.
Snapchatting.
Got a happy Halloween.
Oh, we got a happy Halloween.
Oh, fantastic. So did you feel like were you very upset with the way that Dawn was treated on the internet after the whole thing happened with her and Brenda?
It wasn't surprising, actually. I mean, I heard that she had death threats and all this other craziness going on. But
were the death threats from Brandon Hance?
What's that?
Were the death threats from Brandon Hance?
No.
Okay.
I could make a bad joke at his expense, but I'd rather not. no, I think it was it was understandable. I mean, she needed to pay for what she did. And I remember after we were done with the show and we were all hanging out at Ponderosa, I mean, I didn't even want to talk to her. Like, I gave her a hug and I said, it's okay, Dawn, but you have to realize this is not a decision. Like, yeah, you made a strategic decision in a game, but we thought you were friends. Like, you make legitimate friendships with people sometimes on this show, and we thought she had, and she broke them. And it's not enough to say, I'm sorry, can we be friends again? Like, no, you basically put a price tag on Brenda's friendship.
Gary Drzelinski wants to know, with Jeff Probst reckoning that Colton's medevac was a quit, are you worried that he will look at how you went out of the Survivor Caramel in the same way? So the way that Colton left the game the first time in Survivor One World was actually pretty similar to how you went out during right. Survivor Caramel. Now, Jeff Probst retroactively has called this a quit. Do you feel like that if you come back a third time that Jeff Probst will out you as a quitter?
I don't think so. I mean, when it happened, when that was all taking place, I had to watch it on TV at the finale to piece together what happened because I was so out of it. Like, I was just so dizzy, so disoriented. And I remember hearing Jeff Probst say, what do you want to do? And I said, can't we just wait around a few minutes? Like, it was so out of, like, that's not a correct answer. Like, you're not with it. Like, I would never say that in that situation. Like, I was just so out of it. Like Cochran, and Cochran kind of floated into view. And then Sherry kind of floated into view. Like, it was just, there was never my decision to make to go or stay. It was totally a medical decision. And I love the doctors. The doctors on Survivor are wonderful. They did they made the right call at the end of the day. That being said, though, like, I would have stayed in had that not occurred, and had I not been so out of it. I had no plan for the end strategically, but I don't think I was in a position to just quit, to outright quit.
Yeah. Joseph Rodriguez wants to know, I think Tyson touched on a really interesting aspect of Survivor that hasn't been discussed on the show when he said some people take this game too seriously and it ruins their lives and makes them angry. I think Eric probably has a very interesting perspective on this because of his move in Micronesia. He probably had to deal with that choice in the real world where people ask him about it constantly and why he did it. I just want to know if you could provide some insight into that side of Survivor. So, okay, after Colton left the game, Tyson said that, you know, look, there are people who take this Survivor experience and they let it ruin their lives. And I agree with Joseph. I bet you do have some interesting perspective on this.
Yeah. The first time that happened, it was pretty interesting because I did something that's considered stupid and wrong, and I made the wrong move clearly. That being said, I had a lot of people supporting me at the same time saying, you made the right decision, or I would have made a similar decision. So for me, I saw both sides of it. I saw the, you're a dumbass, God hates you, and all kinds of strange comments coming out of the internet. And then I also heard, you made the right decision, you're a good person. So I did see both sides of that. And I was able to say, like, you know what, there's kind of two personalities, or there's two personas. There's how people see you on this show, how people see you as Eric from Survivor, and there's the people in your everyday life who know who you are, who live with you, like your fiance, your father, your brothers, the people that you live with. So there's kind of that dual personality when it comes to Survivor. And a lot of people aren't able to understand that unless they go through it. And that's something that I've had the fortune of understanding.
Have you encountered any people that you would say Survivor has ruined their lives? And you don't have to name names, but it's okay if you want to also.
There's definitely people who Survivor has ruined their life, and it's because they can't get over it. They can't realize that... What?
They're still ego-tripping.
Oh, thank you. Dana just said they're still ego-tripping. There's plenty of people still ego-tripping off of shoulda, woulda, coulda, I could have done this, I should have done that. I know Amy, for example, this is not in a negative way, but Amy still busts my chops every time I see her for helping to vote her out and trick her in Micronesia. Like, that devastated her. Like, we had a pretty good friendship out there, and I betrayed it at the last minute to save myself. And Amy will never forgive me for that. She will never forgive me for that crap. And it's so personal in this game format. I mean, when you play Monopoly, you don't get mad when you're finally broke and voted out, like lose the game. You don't get really mad. the way that this game's set up, you're so in close contact with people. It's like you're voting out family members by the end of it. But that depends on the human. I mean, Russell Hance, I don't think, considered people his family members playing the game. But I certainly did. And other people do. So it's very high school. It's very...
Russell Hance would vote out his family members.
He would. Oh, yeah. And he'd say, yeah. It's different for every group of people. And that's kind of what the core of Survivor is. It is a social experiment. It's what people's standards are willing to do, what the culture is of it. It's a game show second to me, which is why a lot of people give me grief, like, oh, you're not a strategic player. Well, I never was interested in Survivor because of, like, that strategic aspect. I was interested in the travel, and I was interested in people interacting with other people.
Nick Fishman wants to know, what contestant would be the most fun to trick-or-treat with? Are you going to be going trick-or-treating later today?
Probably not. Okay. I was going to go work at a haunted house because I worked at a haunted house the past couple of years. It's the most fun job in the world. I basically just dress up as an orderly in a hospital covered in blood, and I scare the crap out of people, and it's so much fun.
Is that haunted house in Hell, Michigan?
It's close to hell. It's not in hell, but it's close to hell. Just outside hell. It's like in one of the seven circles. And it's so much fun. Like, you'll see the biggest guy in there with muscles, and he might be this biggest scaredy cat, and he runs away from you and breaks down a wall to escape from you. Like, it's nutso. It's so much fun. So no trick-or-treating. Somebody who would be fun to go trick-or-treating with, though, would probably be Cowboy, I would say, because Cowboy is totally nuts.
Who's Cowboy? And, oh, Cowboy from Survivor Cook Islands?
Survivor Cook Islands, Cowboy from Vietnam, originally from Vietnam. He is a hoot. That guy is crazy. When I met him and stayed with him, it was at a reality function, like a reality charity event. He ended up getting us invited to a wedding that he didn't even know anybody at, but we were invited as guests of honor. They had never watched Survivor. This was not related to Survivor at all. It was a Mexican wedding, so we had the best Mexican food ever at like 2 or 3 in the morning. And from there, I went to stay with him in Key West, where he lived on a boat by choice, just kind of homeless. It was the most fun I've ever been being poor. It was ridiculous. We had great food every night. We met all kinds of insane people. But Cowboy is amazing. He's such a crazy people person. I can't imagine him trick-or-treating. He would be in the house by the end of the session. Like, he'd be in someone's house, like, eating their food with them.
Yeah.
He would, like, talk his way in.
I would say second best to go trick-or-treating with, probably, I'd say go Jenna and Heidi, because, you know, if to get their hands on some chocolate, it'll be an interesting night out.
You know the reference? There's a reference.
Sorry, I don't want to get you in trouble with your fiance, Eric.
They took off their clothes for chocolate and peanut butter.
Uh-oh. That's surprising with some of the Survivor girls.
Oh,
now, that's all it takes, apparently.
Yeah, Eric. Now we know you're off the market, but here's a question from Mike Scal wants to know: if you weren't engaged, would you date someone who did not make the merge?
No,
you wouldn't. Yeah.
Seriously. No.
Oh my God!
I'm just joking.
Oh,
a little rude. That's like the second rude comment that's come out of your mouth today.
No, that wouldn't matter to me. Okay. I would date someone who didn't make.
You would date somebody that wouldn't make the merge. Do you feel? Are there a lot of survivors? Okay, if we polled, 100 survivors, 100 single survivors, how many of the 100 single survivors who made the merge? What percentage of that 100 do you think would not date someone who did not make the merge?
You need to do this now because I want to see this. This is really interesting. This is like that socioeconomic thing that interests me in Survivor. That's the kind of thing that interests me.
It's like card sharks.
You would find, I don't know, because it would go both ways, because I'm sure it would go, a lot of them would say, you know what, it doesn't matter. But some of them would be like, I would prefer someone who wouldn't make the merge.
I think it depends on the people who are cast.
It depends on the people who are cast.
It depends on the type of person.
Do you think it's a bigger issue for girls or for guys?
Bigger issue for girls or guys?
I think it's a bigger issue for the women.
Yeah, I think there'd be a doubt about performance quality with the men that did not make the merge.
I feel like for most men, I feel like they would date a aesthetically pleasing woman who did not make the merge. Where I feel like a lot of the Survivor women would date a less aesthetically pleasing guy who made the merge over a more aesthetically pleasing guy who did not make the merge.
Cochran is all set.
I think Cochran would get it, but he may not believe it. I think he would get a date with a lot of these women before,
Dana says she would think that Cochran has gotten definitely more dates from his last Survivor performance.
Yeah, I think so.
He shows everything you need. He has the endurance, the stamina. He has the bank account now. He's all set. He's like a trifecta.
Boom. There you go. He's got everything going for him. Are you watching The Millers?
No.
Oh.
Sadly, I'm not. We're Netflix in it. We're doing Netflix, and then we watch Survivor here and there with friends or wherever we can find it.
Yeah. All right, so let's see. Let's do a couple more questions. How about David Cintron wants to know, Eric, was giving away the immunity necklace in essence your ticket to being on Survivor Karamoan and thus personally wasn't such a bad decision looking back at it now?
I totally agree with that. I don't think I did enough on Micronesia to warrant a second time on a show. I mean, had I not given away immunity... first of all, though, I mean, I could have, it's kind of a catch-22, because if I wouldn't have given away immunity, I think I would have had a very good chance at winning. So I would have been memorable in that I won the game. Giving away immunity, though, was very memorable in that it was stupid and ridiculous and so polarizing. So yeah, either way you looked at it, my choice with immunity there guaranteed my second time on the show.
Were you mad that JT won the award for biggest Survivor mistake?
Yeah, that's stupid. It was only because JT was on the current
recency bias. Yes.
That's so stupid. Like, JT won this award for stupidest survivor ever.
No, but it's move. Stupidest survivor move. I don't think they called him the stupidest survivor.
Yeah, stupidest survivor that's move. You. I know, that's me.
Yes.
Yeah, but... Anyway, so he was on the current season when they decided to vote, and that's the only reason he won that. I think I did something very, very stupid that deserved some type of recognition.
Yes. It should deserve some recognition. Maybe they should do another vote. Nathan Bayless wants to know, as a former ice cream scooper, what flavor of ice creams are the current Survivor contestants? I'll throw some Survivors out at you. Could you give me the ice cream flavor that represents them?
Okay, yeah.
All right, let's start with, how about Laura Boneham?
Vanilla? She's vanilla. I would say she's more of a vanilla, but she wears that tie-dye shirt, so she wants to be Superman.
How about Cherry Garcia?
Cherry Garcia. That's a good flavor.
It is a good flavor. Does that tie in with tie-dye?
I like that.
Let's see. All right. Well, how about what about Tyson?
Tyson.
Coconut?
Tyson would be...
It's like a creme brulee to me.
Creme brulee?
Yeah.
Creme brulee.
A mocha
flavor?
I don't know.
Whoa.
I don't see Tyson as a mocha flavor.
Like something coffee or like a creme brulee. Okay, that's what he comes up.
Yeah, you're going to be in the conversation for this.
Dana knows a lot about ice cream.
Well, we both love ice cream. I'm pretty sure. Tyson, I think, would be more of one with like a weird flavor. Like one with like nuts in it or something. Or like
what?
Peanut butter cups or something weird in it.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a little funky. He's a little funky.
All right, what about Kat? What flavor of ice cream is Kat?
Cat would be like a peach flavor, like a fruit flavored one, like
you think
a
so?
Yeah, like a not necessarily raspberry, but like a more like a sherbet type,
yeah,
like orange sherbet.
I think a sherbet.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's do one more. What about Otis?
Eric, he'd be one of the he would be a solid flavor. He would be like a
like
a cookie dough maybe.
Not solid.
Like one of the go-to flavors, like a chocolate.
Yeah.
Eris would be like a chocolate.
Okay. Adam Selkov wants to know, which Survivor this season is most likely to give away immunity and whom should they give it to?
Give away immunity? nobody if they're smart.
I think it's got to be one of the loved ones. Give it to, I feel like either it's Otis and Vetus or Tina and Katie.
I could see Tina give it to her daughter. I could see Tina do that.
Yeah. What do you think of Tina saying that she wants her daughter to marry Vetus?
What?
It was the last episode. Oh. She didn't see the last episode.
Oh, sorry for spoiling.
Tina mentioned that she wanted her daughter to marry Vetus because Vetus is an upstanding guy. And Vetus was bragging about the only thing that women like better than a bad boy is a reformed bad boy.
That's true.
Which showed how dangerous he is, and everyone should just, all the girls should just stay away.
Yeah.
But that was actually pretty interesting. I thought that was kind of funny. And Tina was just probably just having fun with that, I think.
Is that what attracted Dana to you, that you reformed your image as a bad boy?
Yes.
Yes.
I was very, very much a bad boy. She didn't watch any Survivor prior to us dating, and she didn't care, which I actually preferred. And I kept asking her, I was like, do you care about Survivor? Like, do you want to know about it? And she's like, absolutely not. Like, no, I'm not interested, which I kind of liked.
And then let's do one more question from Setsu Meow, who wrote this on our Reddit page. For today's interview, Eric got a rather invisible edit in Fans versus Favorites 2. If you were put in charge of your edit for the season, what would your storyline be? And now, this came up a lot last night with Jeff talking to Tribal Council with Vetus. Like, hey, isn't this a great story that Vetus, he was like, he was addicted to drugs and now he's back. And he's like, Laura, what's your story? So, Eric, if you were in charge of, what should your story have been on Survivor Karamoan?
My story probably would have been that I was a goofball before. I had no idea what I was doing. I just wanted to show that I was a little bit more mature and a little bit more aware of what was going on, rather than I was clueless and wandering through, because I did have a plan and I thought that I was telling that plan to people that needed to know it, like producers and other people that I trusted more, such as like Brenda or Dawn. But it just came across as like, oh, Eric's just there. His story's not important. Really, I would have just liked to see them give more storyline to everybody. Like, not just focus on a Cochran and a Phillip.
Mm-hmm. I know I would be annoyed if I was on a season and that was the case. You know, it's like, you know, you go out there and you're there, and you know, I'm sure I've been on both sides of it. On my first season, like, I was probably the one that my other castmates were annoyed that, like, oh, like, you know, we have something to say too besides Rob. And then my second time, like, I, you know, not that I was there a long time, but I didn't have a lot to say, and I know I was there, like, yeah. You know, I was, you know, I know I was talking to the camera, but the sword cuts both ways, I guess. So Eric, well, thank you so much for coming on with us. Can you give us a prediction for the winner of Survivor Blood versus Water?
Oh god, it's got to be, I want to say Vetus, because Eris seems too predictable to win at this point. Vetus probably is going to win. I think Vetus is the guy. That's my prediction.
Okay. So, all right. So Eric says Vetus for winner of Survivor Karamoan. We'll see. Does Dana have a prediction?
Yeah. I would agree with Vetus. I think that's probably who it is, just judging by what I've seen so far and the edits and everything.
Yeah, he's pretty likable.
That's good. You guys are on the same page. You're very Culpepper-esque. Yeah.
I got to work out more.
Okay. All right. Well, Eric, thanks so much for coming on with us. And congratulations to you and Dana. And have a very happy Halloween and a happy engagement.
You have a happy Halloween as well.
And Eric, I know people who want to read your Starved for Attention. How do people get their hands on this comic book?
All you need to do is you can go online to www.ericreichenbachcomics.com, or you can go to amazon.com and just search Eric Reichenbach, and all of my comic books should be there. So just go to amazon.com and it should be on there.
Right, so I'll make a link that will send people directly there using our Rob is a Podcast promo code, our affiliate code. What do you want to call that? Give me a short link for that. We can call it Eric Comics. Give me the
Yeah, that's fine. That works.
All right, so go to robinswebsite.com/ericcomics, and then I'll go directly to Eric's stuff on Amazon. Eric, thank you so much.
Oh. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Have a happy Halloween.
All right, happy Halloween. Take care. Watch out for razor blades in the candy.
Oh, I can eat. I'll be fine.
All right, take care. All right. All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Eric Reichenbach here on Rob is a Podcast. Now, in just a couple of minutes, we are going to speak with Kurt Clark, who has got a very fun Halloween Survivor game that he has planned for us to play here on the show. And then we're going to hear all your voicemails and what the survivors are saying on social media. But I mentioned at the top of the show that this podcast is sponsored by our friends at Hover.com. And Hover is the easiest way to get your domain name registered. Now, there's a lot of other places that you can go that are going to try to upsell you and try to sell you a bill of goods. But much like Laura Boneham, they're going to give it to you straight, and they're going to tell you exactly what is going on, and there's not going to be any secrets or anything like that. Hover also has a no-hold phone policy, so when you want to get somebody on the phone, you have a problem, you know you're going to be speaking to somebody who can help you out, and you don't have to wait or ever talk to a computer. And you could also do valet transfers of your already existing domains, so they can go ahead and help you with stuff that you have with some of the other guys that are out there. And plus, they could also help you out with getting set up with Google apps, which are great for your small business. Things like Gmail, Calendar, Google Drive, all things that help you work in groups and be more productive. So check it out. You can get a 30-day free trial on Google Apps at hover.com. And also, you'll get 10% off a new domain registration when you go to hover.com and use promo code ROB. And if you got any other questions about what to do, just go ahead and check out hover.com. They've got great customer support, and they'll be happy to help you with any of your questions at hover.com. All right, everybody. So let's bring in our guest for the second half of the podcast. You guys may know him from our series of Whodunit podcasts over the summer, and he is also the accounting firm, the one-man accounting firm behind Miss Survivor. Please welcome in Kurt Clark.
Hey there, Rob. Yeah, I forgot I kind of transitioned from a mystery solver to counter kind of over the fall months.
Yes, that's right. And Kurt, I mentioned it with Steven last night. I don't know if you caught on Survivor Know-It-Alls. I had, you know, I don't even think I responded back to your email about your generous offer to be the official pollster of Rob Has a Podcast. But I mentioned it on the show that Steven and I will have the could have the ability to make a Rob Has a Podcast poll at the end of Survivor Know-It-Alls to poll the audience.
Yeah, definitely. Can't do a guys figure out something you want to talk about. Give me a shout. We'll do a quick flash poll, and depending on how long you want it out there, can get results turned around pretty quickly.
You know, what I'd like to do is I think it would be cool to do it where we answer, like we ask a question the night before, and then the next morning or when I do the Thursday podcast, we can have the answer to, okay, should Kat have been the one? Should they vote off Kat or Vetus? And then sort of do it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be fun. So we should talk offline on how to set this up.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
All right. So, Kurt, I am under the impression that you have a game for us to play here today, that it is Halloween.
It is.
You do love games, as evidenced by your love of murder mystery. And
yep.
I am under the impression that you have made up a game for me to play here today with you.
Yeah, it's in honor of the Halloween holiday. I have kind of gone out and scoured the interwebs with the help of some of the other staff on the Rob Has a Podcast team. And I have a series of 10 questions for you about survivors, past and present, and their selection of Halloween costumes.
All right, this is very exciting, Kurt. So do you have a name for this game?
The first name that came to mind was Trick or Tweet.
Okay.
Because initially we were scouring the Twitter feeds of people to find out if they've been posting pictures of their costumes. But then I realized it just became a lot easier to ask people what they were planning on dressing as. So as a grain of salt, some of this is basically what we're being told they are dressing up as. Some of this we don't actually have photographic evidence of.
Okay.
But I'm going with Trick or Tweet just because of the Halloween holiday.
It's close enough. Yeah. So explain to me the rules of how this is going to work.
Okay, I'm going to give you the name of someone who is currently on or was previously on Survivor, and then give you four choices for what they are dressing up as for Halloween. And simply enough, you have to guess what their costume is.
Okay, sounds good enough. All right, and what do I get if I win?
Our undying gratitude for the great work you're doing on this weekly podcast.
Do I get your vote for the podcast awards?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. I mean, every day, you have to vote every single day, Kurt, if I get these right.
Okay.
Or what's the bar? Give me the like six out of 10?
We'll go, yeah. It's going to be, I'm going to say 5 out of 10 because these are tough.
Okay.
I got some help from some of the interns in coming up with fake answers. I know Alex Forstenhausler actually chimed in with some ideas as well. So we're really trying to pull one over on you here.
Okay.
So let's go 5 out of 10.
We'll see. And maybe, you know, we don't want this to be a 9-hour podcast, so maybe 10 is. Let's see how long these take also.
Okay. It should go pretty quick.
But let's see. Wherever we stop, I have to be over 500.
Okay.
All right. Good. Here we go. All right. Let's start. It's like Millionaire. All right. Are these in order of increasing difficulty?
They're not. I actually am starting with Survivor's Past, and I was going to end on Survivor's Present.
Okay. All right. This is like the Christmas Story.
A little bit. And speaking of which, going back to old school Survivor, or what I like to term as classic Survivor, I think we have one of our classic Survivor players, Jerry Manthe.
Okay.
As the first question.
Here we go.
And, you know, classic Survivor player going with a classic costume, but which classic costume is it? Is she going as a witch, Bride of Frankenstein, a zombie, or a vampire? Jerry Manthe.
This is tough. I feel like, I feel like the one that's on the nose is a witch. Vampire is like so a couple years ago. Zombie is probably the most topical. Bride of Frankenstein is interesting. I feel like that's the most clever. I'm torn between Bride of Frankenstein or Zombie. I'm going to go with Bride of Frankenstein.
Okay. Interesting to note, this is the costume Jerry told me that she goes as every year. She is a vampire for every Halloween.
Oh, you're like a taboo buzzer. Yeah, okay. Okay. For one. Now, do we have pictures of these?
That's what I said. Some of them we have photographic evidence of, some of them we don't.
All right, tell me the ones that we do have photographic evidence, and then after the show, I'll post them if people want to see the pictures.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So what should I do? Should I just make a page with robiswebsite.com/survivor costumes?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
Good. So you can see all these the pictures that Kurt collected at Survivor Costumes.
Okay.
robiswebsite.com/survivorcostumes.
There we go. Second up, another Rob has a podcast favorite, Courtney Yates.
Okay.
And she's actually going this year as a character from a sci-fi movie or TV series.
Whoa.
Is she going as Starbuck? From the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
Okay.
Is she going as Pris from Blade Runner?
Hmm.
Is she going as Trinity from the Matrix films? Or is she an Ewok?
This is interesting. I can't see Courtney Yates watching Battlestar Galactica, the original or the reboot version. I don't know if she would be so into the Matrix. That's such an old reference. And I don't see her as a Blade Runner. I see her. I think she would be an Ewok. I think she would watch Return of the Jedi. I'm going to go with Ewok.
Final answer?
Final answer.
Pris from Blade Runner.
Whoa. Who knew? All that time with Steven Fishback made her nerdy.
A little bit.
Okay, so I'm 0 for 2.
You're 0 for 2. I'm telling you, we made these tough.
Okay. All right.
I think they're revealing, but they are tough.
Very, very revealing. All right, keep going. Number 3, 0 for 2.
Yeah, number 3, one of my favorites, Francesca.
Okay.
Speaking of 0 for 2, so she's revealing her main costume on Saturday. She wouldn't tell me what that was, but she did tell me what her secondary costume was.
Okay.
Is her secondary costume a Black Widow? And we're talking puns here.
Right. So if we're talking puns, then she is going to be like someone who lost their husband?
Yes, that's what we're talking about.
Got it. Okay.
Or Michonne from The Walking Dead.
Okay.
Is she going as the latest incarnation of Doctor Who? Or is she going as a Matchbox?
I'm going to go with the Black Widow because I don't think that the writing staff of Rob Has a Podcast is that controversial that they would throw Black Widow in there as a pun. I think that you guys, I could be wrong about this. I think that I don't know if you guys would go there. Final answer.
You are correct.
Yes.
You are correct.
You guys are a pretty PC group. I don't see that you guys coming up with that for mass consumption. Yeah.
Fair enough. Next up, another Rob Has a Podcast favorite, Eliza. Eliza Orleans.
Yes.
She decided to delve into the world of texting scandals. So which star of texting scandals is she going as for Halloween? Is she going as Vanessa Hudgens from High School Musical? Mm-hmm. Is she going as Lindsay Lohan from Everything TMZ?
Mm-hmm.
Is she going as Anthony Weiner? Or is she going as Brett Favre?
Boy, you know, Eliza is the is a New York City resident, even though she spent some time in China in the past year. I wouldn't know what a Vanessa Hudgens costume would look like. Lindsay Lohan is interesting, but is it topical? I feel like Eliza wants to be in the zeitgeist, and I would go with Anthony Weiner.
You are now two for four.
Yes.
You got it correct.
I've got back. I got back into this thing. Don't count me out.
And that was really me trying to comb the internet for what are potential other texting scandal themes that we could match up against.
Now, what does an Anthony Weiner costume look like?
Well, you know what? This is one of the ones we do have a photo of, so I'll make sure that we get that to post.
Does she just have like a huge bulge in her pants?
Amongst other things.
Oh, my God.
But we do have photos.
Or is it like a pun? Is it like, is she dressed
no.
like a phallus and then with like a name tag? Hello, my name is Anthony.
Closer to the first. I believe that she does have the name Anthony on her shirt. But,
okay, got it. Okay.
Okay.
Two for two. Back in business.
Back, you building up that streak.
I'm like Hayden. I lost the first couple of challenges, but now I won.
There you go.
Okay.
Next up. Our current reigning Miss Survivor, RC.
All right.
She is going as a music personality. But which music personality is she going as? Is she going as Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Miley Cyrus, or a girl from Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines video?
Ooh. I think it was, well, I would love to be at the party where somebody was going as one of the girls from the Robin Thicke Blurred Lines videos. hashtag RHAP. So let's see. I'm going to eliminate that. I don't think since those women are topless, I'm going to imagine that RC is not going as one of those women. Miley would be topical. But I'm not sure if RC could, as a, I think it would take a lot of work to get an RC to be a Miley Cyrus. What are the other options? Katy Perry or what is the other one?
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
So I'm torn between Katy Perry and Gaga. I'm going to go with Katy Perry because I think that... it's the closest to what RC actually looks like. It wouldn't be, you could almost see RC as Katy Perry if you squint. I'm going to go with Katy Perry.
You are correct.
Okay. I know I get inside the head of these survivors and what they're thinking.
Yep. And you're now in a streak.
Yeah. I'm hot.
And we're three in a row. And speaking of threes, that'll make more sense when I get to the question. Sophie G. Clark.
Okay.
She went as one member of a trio.
Ooh.
What was the trio?
Hanson.
No.
Okay.
The trio was one of these. Her and two of her friends went as the id, the ego, and the superego. They went as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They went as earth, wind, and fire. Or did they go as Mo, Larry, and Curly from the Three Stooges?
Boy, Sounds like a really fun party. Somebody's gonna go hit the ego and the super ego. Says more than we had Earth, Wind, and Fire. The ego, Three Stooges, and what was the other one?
Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness.
All right, I'm going to rule out the Three Stooges, because if it was the Three Stooges that she was, I think that these other choices are just way off. I think you would have given me, like, Alvin, Simon, and Theodore. So I'm going to rule that one out.
Okay.
I guess I'm between Life, Liberty, Pursuit of Happiness, and Id, Ego, and Super Ego. I don't know. What would you do as Life, Liberty? Id, Ego, and Super Ego is so bizarre and so random. I'm going to go with that.
You are correct.
Yes, thank you.
So for a bonus point, which
Sophie?
One was Sophie?
I'm going to go with the Super Ego.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Ego.
Regular Ego. Okay. All right.
Yeah, regular Ego, yeah.
All right. I'm 4-2, though.
You are 4-2, and we're actually entering the home stretch. We have four survivors from the current season and their costumes.
Okay.
First up, Tina's daughter, Katie Collins.
I feel like I don't have a good finger on the pulse of the Katie Collins.
Apparently, she likes bad puns. So which of these bad pun costumes did she go as for Halloween? Did she go with the one night stand costume, where she is dressed up as a nightstand?
Got it.
Did she go as the French Kiss, where she dressed up as one of the singers from Kiss with a beret and a loaf of French bread?
Which is the Jessica Frey costume.
It is the Jessica Frey costume.
I don't know.
Did she go as Dumbledore the Explorer, kind of a mashup of costumes? Or did she go as Raining Cats and Dogs? So regal wear, a crown, and lots of stuffed animals and puppies and kitties duct taped to her.
All right, so I don't think that she was the French Kiss. I'm gonna eliminate that. I'm okay. Also going to eliminate the Dumbledore the Explorer, because I think that's too clever here. I don't think that would be a bad pun. I think if that's what she was, I think that we would have gotten I think that would have affected the other choices. I think we would have had the choices would have been like Harry Pottery Barn, stuff like that. So I think I'm between the one night stand and the reigning, what was this, reigning cats and dogs? It was like a royal cats and dogs thing.
Yeah, someone dressed up as basically a regal cape and a crown, so reigning, but then stuffed animals of dogs and cats duct taped to it.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I'm going to go with that.
It was French Kiss.
Oh, she copied Jessica Frey? See, yep. If I didn't see that on Jessica Frey as that on Twitter, I might have gone with that. So that's a... Sorry, buzz. All right.
Buzz. Okay.
It's still Vetus. Sitting pretty at 4-3.
You are. Can Vetus put you over the top is the question. No, Vetus does not have a costume this year, but he did inform me as to what he dressed up as last year.
Okay.
So the question is, which influential personality from 2012 did Vetus dress up as? Did he go as stratospheric freefaller Felix Baumgartner? You know, that guy who set the world record for highest free fall into the atmosphere?
I did not, but go ahead.
Okay, yep. Did he go as particle physicist Peter Higgs of the Higgs boson particle?
Yeah.
Did he go as the NASA Mars Curiosity rover? You know, another big, big event in 2012. Or Adele?
Oh, boy. I'm going to rule out Adele, because I think if it was Adele, I think the other choices would be like other musical acts. So I'm going to rule out Adele. And then I don't think he went as the Mars rover, because again, I think if he had gone as the Mars rover, I think we would have had other inanimate objects. So I'm going to
you're playing the meta game here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with. I'll go with the free fall guy.
Unfortunately, it was the particle physicist Peter Higgs.
I had it right there.
Yeah.
Slipped through my fingers. Okay, all right. Still two left to go.
Yeah, two more. two more chances. Let's see if Monica Culpepper can put you to five.
All right.
So which person did she go as? Which kind of gets classified as these as butt kickers? Xena, Warrior Princess? Bond Girl, Xenia Onatopp from GoldenEye? Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman from Batman Returns? Or Foxy Cleopatra from Austin Powers?
I don't think that she would do blackface, so I'm going to rule out Foxy Cleopatra, okay. The Beyonce character from Goldmember, I believe.
Yep,
so I'll rule her out. I feel like the other two references are very specific to be a specific Bond girl or what was the third one?
Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman from Batman Returns.
Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman. I feel like that's also very specific. I feel like Xena Warrior Princess seems like the most straightforward of these four costumes. I feel like that's the one I'm going to go with. I'll go with Xena.
Foxy Cleopatra.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm going to buzz myself and Monica for that. That's... Do we have photo?
We do not have a photo. We could ask.
Oh, no. I feel like... I say nothing. Let's move on.
Let's move on to Colton coming off of this last question.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This is our final chance. This is like, you know, playing it right down the wire. Actually, Colton and Caleb, together, they dressed as a duo.
If Colton was in blackface, then we're just going to delete this whole podcast.
He was not. Colton played it tastefully. But what did Colton and Caleb dress up as? Did they dress up as Batman and Robin? Did they dress up as Super Mario Brothers? Bill and Hillary Clinton? Or did they go as each other?
Ooh.
So your final question, your final guessing.
Yeah, let's see. Could you repeat that? What did you call it? You called it a duo? What was the category here?
They went as a couple. They dressed together. I didn't really...
I feel like the Colton move, I feel very strongly about one of these four choices.
Okay. Positively or negatively?
I feel strongly positive about one of these four. Could you just give them to me one more time?
We have Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
We have Super Mario Brothers. We have Bill and Hillary Clinton, and we have each other.
I feel strongly...
Mm-hmm.
That they would go for Halloween as each other.
Final answer?
That is my final answer.
Batman and Robin.
Oh, come on. I blew it. Yeah.
You know what? I will give you a chance to get that fifth and final point if you can guess.
Redemption.
Who went as who?
Well, I feel like this is a very telling question about this particular relationship. Who is Batman and who is Robin? I feel very strongly that Caleb is the Batman of this relationship and Colton is the Robin of this relationship.
Congratulations, you got your fifth point.
A very interesting insight into the Colton and Caleb relationship. Well, thank you. I think that was, I don't know if that counts or not. Maybe do I get like 8 out of 15 days you vote for podcast awards?
Yeah, I'll still do it.
All right, thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Kurt. Yeah. All right, well, good, great job with the game. Very very fun.
And thanks to everybody who helped, especially the survivors who kind of tweeted me with what they'd be wearing, and really really appreciate everyone chipping in.
Yes, we appreciate the survivors participating with the Rob as a podcast always. So
always.
Now to get into your participation. Let's listen to some of the voicemails that you guys have left us here on Rob as a podcast this week, and of course that voicemail number is 323-282-RHAP. But it works even better when you use our voicemail link at robasawebsite.com/voicemail, because then you get to type in your name and it's so much easier for me. And everything shows up here in my fancy speak pipe dashboard. So Kurt, are you ready to hear some voicemails?
I've never been readier.
Okay. Let's start with John Frutiger. And he has a question about the edits this season. All right, take it away, John. Here we go.
Hey, Rob. John from Madison here. I'm wondering if you could share your opinion on poor edits pre-merge leading to predictable boots. I've noticed that the past 3 out of 4 weeks, people who have had very little airtime in previous episodes all of a sudden get a ton of airtime and then get the boot. 3 weeks ago, it was Laura M. No airtime the first 4 episodes, then 4 confessionals in her boot week. Last week, it was Kat. No airtime the first 5 episodes, then last week, she had a number of confessionals. This week, Laura B. No airtime in the first 6 episodes. This week, countless confessionals. Are the producers giving away the quote-unquote blindsides during the show? I'm hoping you can comment on this and also on whom you and Eric think is getting the best winner edit this season. Thanks.
All right, Kurt. I know this is a subject that you are passionate about. Are the editors giving too much away this season? Have you felt like these edits have been obvious?
I especially did notice it last night with Laura B. It wasn't so much the sudden onslaught of confessionals we got, but it was more kind of it's so obvious that Vetus is going home, and then slight hints that it would be her just in terms of what people are actually saying. But I do agree that there does seem to be quite a bit of of that kind of approach to the editing going on. We suddenly see a lot of a person and then they're gone. I think the tricky thing with that is that you never remember those moments where you suddenly see a lot of somebody and they end up sticking around. So it's kind of also a thing that if you keep an eye out for it, it's going to kind of be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, last night it was last night. I did feel very strongly once we went to Laura B. I felt like, oh boy, Laura B. definitely going home. That when Tina started talking about how great Vetus was and how Vetus was going to marry her daughter, that was when I said, okay, definitely Laura B. is the one going home.
Right.
So also the commercials, I've talked about it a few times this season. I feel like the commercials this season, last week I saw a commercial during football where they were like, old rivalries are heating up. And Kat's like, oh my God, Monica, all she does is overstrategize. Kat's going home this week.
Right. And this has also been a season where lots of press picks have been, let out. I think it was like around the third challenge where, people were beating at each other on that raft with those punching bags or whatever. You kind of knew early on who was and wasn't still in the game early on in this season based on photos that were leaked early. So it seems like they are being a little bit less cautious about what they're letting people see ahead of time.
Kurt, do you think that this is partially the fault of Redemption Island? Do you think that Redemption Island is such a big part of the show? It seems like it takes up even more time than just a regular reward challenge would. Like, it's a whole segment of the show. Do you feel like that because we have less time to see the camp life, that the little bit we see is almost very much paint by numbers of what's going to happen for the course of the episode?
I definitely agree that we're seeing a lot more of what goes on Redemption Island this season. Thinking back to the couple prior seasons where it's been in play, we didn't really see that problem happening. We pretty much got the challenge over with pretty quickly and then spent more time in the tribe beaches. Maybe it has to be kind of their shorthand. We're spending less time at the beach, and so the only way we can kind of at least hint that this person's going is the fact that they're suddenly getting a lot of confessionals. I mean, maybe they do have to cram it in. That's a fair point.
Yeah. I had rewatched the episode between Survivor Know-It-Alls and Alyssa, and one of the things that I didn't get to talk about, which I really thought was funny, was the tribe was praying, and they were saying dear God, thank you for Vetus. he's been such a great guy, and God, thank you also for Laura B. That she's on such a it's so funny that you would say a prayer and thank God for each of the people in the tribe also.
Yep. Yeah. And the person, it's like one of the those chopping block challenges where the first person who gets listed last in the prayer better watch themselves.
Yes, I think so. Well, very, very, very interesting. All right. So let's hear from Noah, who wants to talk about, could there be a second Survivor Blood versus Water? Is that possible?
Hey, Rob, this is Noah calling from Amman, Jordan. I have a question about Survivor, not related to this week's episode, but I don't know if you noticed that Probst tweeted specifically requesting casting videos of people with their loved ones. So I'm wondering if you think this whole blood versus water concept is going to be repeated in the future, maybe indefinitely. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
So what do you think, Kurt? You think we're going to have a second Survivor blood versus water? And if so, how long do you think they'll wait before we do another Survivor blood versus water?
I could see us definitely doing one again. I really think that, you know, there was a lot of question marks going into the season on like how compelling the season would be and how good it would be. And I think that we've all been pleasantly surprised and happy with how, at least most of us, with how this season has been going. So I definitely think we could get one. I'd like it to maybe wait a few more seasons. The thing that would be, that I don't think would necessarily work would be doing a blood versus water with unknowns. So if they made it, Noah made it sound like Probst was asking kind of, you know, quote unquote civilians to send in tapes with their loved ones.
The civilians.
The people who aren't alumni of the show. I don't know if it would necessarily be as compelling if there's somebody you don't know and their loved one that you don't know on the show together. I mean, I could be wrong, but I definitely think at least having someone that we are familiar with and then their loved one that we don't necessarily know, I'm finding that to be pretty compelling TV.
All right, two things about this. If we did a second Survivor Blood versus Water with civilians and their loved ones, would it be more interesting if the tribes were divided by the relationship of one tribe of blood relatives, one tribe versus people who are in a romantic relationship, and we got to see the interactions of the pairs together? Would that make for a more interesting season than this format that we have with civilians?
It would be, I think, slightly different. You wouldn't necessarily have the whole, all the drama of getting to Redemption Island to see that your loved one was voted off the other tribe the last time around. But what it could make for some interesting relationships in terms of alliances, on any given tribe. I don't know if it would necessarily be better. I think it would be different. I'd be interested in seeing it and how, because I know that was, I think, for this season, there were some rumors that was going to be how this was going to play out, that you're going to have pairs on the same tribe. So I'd definitely like to see that. I think it could be intriguing as to how that actually plays.
I feel like if you did it with civilians, you'd want to start at least. So I want to see the relationship between this new couple that I don't know, this new. So I want to see that interaction, and then let's swap and let's split them up. Now, once we see like sort of the dynamic between these people. And then number two on this point, I had a conversation about this recently with my friend Ryan Popola, and I was saying that I would like to see Survivor turn to a format much like the WWE does with their pay-per-view schedule, where as like, okay, this month is the Royal Rumble, and you have, and that looks like a certain thing. This month is the King of the Ring, and that looks like a certain thing. And this month is the Survivor Series. This is WrestleMania, and so. I was saying that, okay, this is it. So Survivor 27, this is Blood versus Water. So now Survivor 37 is now also Survivor Blood versus Water again. And so the every 10 is like a big All-Stars. Every number 7 is Blood versus Water. And we come up with, figure out what all the different formats are for the different season, and then we have some sort of a standardized recurring schedule for Survivor seasons.
That would be great for the OCD members of our audience.
Do you like that? Do you like?
I really don't. I really, really don't. Buzzing, taking away that extra Batman and Robin point you got. I don't like that idea really. Okay. But I'm also someone that doesn't mind. Not knowing, as long as they like, I like an all-star season every now and then. I like a, you know, all civilian season every now and then. But I don't necessarily need the show to commit to you know every prime number season is going to be this.
So Survivor 34 is One World again. Survivor. So again, you figure out what the things are.
But again, I know this is Survivor and not Big Brother, but you also want people to have to basically deal with the unexpected. And if people go into any given season knowing, well, this season's going to definitely be One World, so I'm going to approach the game like it's One World, then the surprises that the players get faced with on the show is part of the fun of watching the show. And so if they kind of know the format definitively going in, that's kind of part of the fun. If they don't know that they're going to shuffle on day X, if that's part of the format or whatever, or One World or Loved Ones. I like them not knowing. I think it makes it more fun to watch.
So you're not excited for Survivor 36 Fans versus Favorites 3?
I'm excited for another Fans versus Favorites. I don't need it to be number 36, and I don't want the players to know going in that it's Fan versus Favorites.
Okay. All right. So, and do you think that any of the medevac players like Eric Reichenbach could be eligible for Survivor 35 when they bring back 3 medevac people?
Definitely. Okay. That one I'll say yes.
Okay. Let's go to Ori Kohav, and he has a question about Tyson's mindset going into the challenge last night.
Yo, Rob, it's Ori Kohav. The Tadhana guy seemed very confident that Vitas is safe, so in order to break the Bushkowski spare, I think they should have thrown the challenge. Do you think they ever considered that? And if they did, what do you think kept them from going for it?
Okay, so this is an interesting question. I saw this a little bit last night on Twitter as well. Should Tyson and company have thrown the challenge last night to vote out Otis at that point? And he called them the Bushkowskis pair. I believe we established last week the correct term is the Bushkowski.
The Bushkowski. I like the slightly more literary, the brothers Bushkowskis.
Ooh.
You have 3 people from the original Galong and 3 people from Tadhana. I think it would have been a bad idea for them to for Tyson or Jervis or whoever to even decide to throw the challenge. I mean, it sounded like they were rallying everybody's votes against Otis, but at the same time, it would just take Caleb and Hayden and Sierra to go to Otis and say, oh, by the way, you know, Tyson and Jervis are planning this. We'd rather, you know, join forces with you and your brother or what have you. So I think when it's 3-3 like that and the numbers are so small, there's not a lot of room to, as you say, get cute with the challenge play there.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to potentially throwing a challenge, but I don't think that this is the right time. I think it already might be too early to vote out Otis, and then now we're going to throw a challenge to vote him out. I don't know. It just seems like... rife with all things that are bad Survivor karma.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's go to Adam and his question. He wants to compare this season to Survivor Karamoan. Take it away.
Hi, Rob. It's Adam from Melbourne here. 2 quick questions. 1, what do you think is going to happen with the loved one visit? Is it going to be a return of the players who are actually eliminated or someone separate? Or not do it at all? And 2, is this a better season than Karamoan because they've cast for level 1 and not for level 2? Interested in your thoughts. Cheers, mate.
All right, well, all right, 2-part question. So what do we think is going to happen? Do we think we'll have a loved one's visit on this season?
You know what? That very question has been running through my mind, you know, at several points in the first few weeks of this. And I honestly have no idea. Like, that's something I'm at least... I don't have an answer for it, but it's something I'm definitely curious to see how that plays out, whether or not, let's say you have a pair that's still in the game. If you have Otis and Vitas both still in the game, when that moment comes, does their mom come out? Do they have 2 different loved ones come out? If one of them is gone, does the other one come back? If you voted your loved one out, would they actually technically still be a loved one and come back and even want to come back? I absolutely have no idea for the first question. But something that I'm really curious to see how that plays.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if we'll just do like letters from home and not have loved ones come out. But it'll be interesting to see how exactly that's going to play out. And then the second part of that question is, do we think that this season is a better season than last season? Because where last season we had so many crazy personalities on the season, this season we don't really have as much of the crazies. Do we think that is why that the season is being better received?
You don't really necessarily get the feeling that there's people jockeying for position in front of the cameras this season, and you get to see a lot more, or hear a lot more of at least the discussion of strategy. That could actually very well be it. I hadn't thought about that, you know, comparing the two, but I like the idea of the level one players versus the level two players, the level one players pushing this season ahead. That could very well be.
And with all due respect to last season, and it was very exciting post-merge, I do feel like it sort of was a very... Once we got down to five or so, it really felt like, well, they spent so much time on Cochrane. Is there anybody that we can even imagine winning this season? Like, I felt like they did a bad job of even giving us somebody that we could possibly envision as being the winner of the season besides Cochrane.
Right, and then, you know, a couple questions ago, I think that was like a follow-up question that the person on the call asked, is like, who do we see as kind of getting the winners at it? And yeah, it's tough at this point. Like, there's, I on the one hand, you see, you know, I could potentially see it being Tyson and Jervis, you know, pushing their way to the end with their, you know, their willingness to be flexible with their original alliance. At the same time, I kind of see Sierra as somebody who was originally kind of has that story of being on the bottom and now slowly being elevated a little bit, you know, more to the top, especially with the merge, you know, pending. So,
see, I don't see it the same way with Sierra, but I'll give you the people that I think that could be winners in my book. Okay, let me go. I'll go down the tribe with Tyson. I think Tyson, yes. I'll say Jervis. Give me he's a little under the radar, but I could see it. I think Otis, I'm starting to feel like, is out. A couple of weeks ago, I would have said yes. I feel like Hayden, I think, is in the mix. Mm-hmm. I'll say Caleb, two under the radar. And I know that Sierra, I don't see it.
What about Katie?
Katie? No, I don't see it either with Katie. Tina, I'll say yes. Monica, I'm saying no, I don't see it. And Vetus, I'll say yes. So okay. I feel like we got a bunch of people in the mix.
Yep.
Okay. So let's see. We won't get into any Redemption Island people because they're on Redemption Island. They don't deserve. You get back in the game, we'll talk about you and your winners at it.
There you go.
All right. So let's go to how about, let's try Mitch. I think his call is, he's calling from the 305, which is Miami. And here we go. Mitch.
Coming to you live from the highway in my car, it's Mitchell, has a question. Hello, Rob. I have a quick question for you. How do you think blood versus water fits in with regard to the jury? On the one hand, I would not want a person's loved one on the jury and then bring them to the finale or the final three because that's a guaranteed vote in their pocket. On the other hand, maybe keeping, say, Vetus around and voting him off after he gets onto the jury puts extra pressure on everybody else to vote Aris out, knowing that that's an extra vote in his pocket at the jury. So it may be the better way to take out both parts of a loved one alliance, specifically Aris and Vetus, maybe Katie and Tina. Anyways, that's my question. Would love to hear your thoughts on it.
All right, well, we haven't started talking about the jury too much on this season. Now, I'm just doing some quick math here. So there's six people on the Tyson tribe. There's four people left on the tribe with Tina and Vetus. There's three people at Redemption Island. So after this next Redemption Island Truel, somebody's going to come back into the game, and then two people are going to be gone, and then that will get us down to 11. So we will be – this will be the jury now.
Yeah.
So there's no chance that, unless they're in the final three, Otis or Vetus will not be on the jury. They will, they'll be in there.
Right.
So, I don't know. Now, if you were going to take out Otis, I kind of feel like maybe it was the right move to throw the challenge because now you're going to have him on the jury.
But I think if that's a concern, then, you know, then there's the chance to, you know, eliminate both brothers. If you get Otis out right away and he's on the jury, then you start to make a compelling point for getting out the other member of any pair whose loved one is on the jury. So that might make it easier to get Vetus out if Otis is on the jury.
Yeah, it's tough. The final three is so tricky because then you end up pissing. Yeah, end up having to make big moves to get far in the game, but then you end up knocking people out, and then they're pissed off at you. And there's invariably going to be somebody who's the least of the three evils sitting there with you at the end. It's tough.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the only people who would actually, that this would apply to would be, what, Tina and Katie, Vitas and Otis, and then potentially Sierra and Laura, mm-hmm. if Laura comes back. It really makes jury management interesting from the perspective of, you know, who's already gone pre-merge and pre-jury and can kind of tell that story, the Tysons, the Jervises, the Calebs, who can say, you know what, I'm not going to have a loved one on the jury, so it doesn't make sense to at least target me right now. It takes jury management to a whole other level that we haven't considered or had to consider before.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And it'll be very interesting to see, like, when your loved one is up there and they ask a question, it's like, you know, you really kill the other person. And it's like, Mom, my question for you is, at what point in this game did you decide that you're... integrity was so great that it was such a shining monument to what a wonderful person you are. Like, well, that's a great question. Thank you. you know, that'd be very, very funny to you know, ask your mom a jury question.
Yeah.
All right, and let's do one more. Let's go to Thomas in Reno, and he has a question about Hayden Moss. Here we go, Thomas.
Hey, Rob. It's Thomas Leeming from Reno, Nevada, and I have a couple quick questions. First, Kat getting voted out reminded me of Big Brother 12 when Kristen got voted out at around the same time. After Kristen left, Hayden was able to lay low until all the big personalities were out of the house. Do you think he will use the same strategy this season and basically lay back while Tyson and Otis take it out? Secondly, I was happy to hear you embrace your title as the Bad Boy of Podcasting, and I was wondering, if I wrote a gangster rap song called Bad Boy Rob, would you play it on the show? Thanks, Rob. Have a good one.
All right, good. Two good questions there. Let me take the second question first. So Thomas wants to know, as the Bad Boy of Podcasting, if he wrote a gangster rap song about me, would I play it on the show? Thomas, I am regret to inform you that I am no longer the Bad Boy of Podcasting. I am the reformed Bad Boy of Podcasting. And now I am a reformed Bad Boy. I'm actually a good guy now.
And if there's one thing listeners like more than a Bad Boy of Podcasting, it's a reformed Bad Boy of Podcasting.
Yes. So maybe if you do send in the gangster rap song, I will maybe I'll put it up to a vote whether or not we should play my Kurt, can we create a poll of whether or not we should listen to a gangster rap song that I would have normally played when I was the Bad Boy of Podcasting, but now that I'm reformed, I have to run this by the audience?
I'll see if I can try to put that that question simply and concisely together.
All right, let me know if you guys would want to hear something like that, because I no longer am interested in that. But if you guys want to hear it, then that's good. We'll do that. Then also this comparison to Hayden and Big Brother 12. Okay, so for you Survivor fans that are out there who did not watch Big Brother 12, Hayden was in this all guy alliance, but on the down low, he sort of had this other girlfriend that were. You know, that for our friend Kat's sake, we're not going to talk about her. Yeah. But there was at one point there was another woman before Kat. And so, you know, Hayden was sort of like, you know, had this secret relationship on the DL. Him and this girl would like go off in this other room at nighttime and nobody until eventually that they didn't realize that there was another guy in the room who was kind of watching them. But then he didn't really say anything before he left. And so, they ended up voting her out of the game, and then post-showmance, Hayden was able to really, you know, focus on his game and get to the end. Do we think that there's a chance that this same scenario plays out on Survivor Blood versus Water?
Yeah, that's a really interesting analogy. I guess that would mean that the rest of the brigade, which was Hayden's alliance in Big Brother 12, would that be like Caleb and Tyson and Jervis and... then would Brendan and Rachel be Otis and Vitas?
I don't know. I don't think that I don't think that the analogy really applies, because in Big Brother 12, the brigade, I think, could have saved Kristen. And they sort of like they didn't like plot to get her out. I don't remember exactly, but they sort of like they didn't save her. And I feel like they could have. And they sort of like were able to like kind of look the other way because they knew it was in their best interest to take away this other option for Hayden's game and get his head focused back on what was important, which was the brigade. So his alliance had nothing to do with Kat being voted out. So I don't think it's exactly the same. But I think there could be a parallel that without his love interest in the game, he might be able to focus more. But I don't think he was distracted by Kat being on the other team.
I just like that I was able to stretch the analogy to the point where I could compare Brennan and Rachel to Otis and Vita stuff.
Sure. There you go. One other thing about Vetus, which I don't think I got to talk about yet. When I rewatched the episode, I was dying when Kurt, I forget, are you a Lost fan?
Yeah.
Okay, and I made the analogy last night of comparing Otis and Vetus to Jacob and the Man in Black, the two brothers from Lost. And so they're talking about what a great guy Vetus is, and so they asked Vetus, Vetus, what's the hardest part of the game for you? And he's like, you know, for me, the hardest part of the game is the dishonesty. Like, I hate the lying. That's really the worst part of the game for me. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is amazing. And they're just like eating it up. Like, oh yeah, tell us more, Vetus. Like, obviously, anybody that tells you the hardest part of the game is the dishonesty of Survivor is really dishonest. Like, that is the perfect answer of like what somebody who was dishonest would say. That the part of the game they hate the most is being dishonest.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's like really like, oh, we should not trust this guy at all.
That was close to being a Dr. Will move from Big Brother.
Yes, Vetus is good. He's good. He's got these women. These women may look back at this at some point and say this was the wrong idea to keep Vetus around instead of Laura B.
But, you know, he's said ever since the tribal shuffle that he's one guy. He's not going to be able to tell the women are going to do what they want to do. He just has to basically, you know, convince them that it's in their best interest to keep him. Hey. He's not playing he's not overplaying his hand. He's being himself and just kind of being straightforward with them, and it's working.
Vetus just wants to live in a world where somebody asks for $100, he just gives it to them and doesn't have to think about what they're really up to. He's just a genuine guy. He's always looking out for the good guy, and he wants to live in a world where if you're going to vote him off, that you come and tell him so he can start to make other plans.
Oy.
Yeah. So good for Vetus, and I did feel like at least he owned it a little bit in his confessional that if you're going to lie to the other players, you could at least be authentic with us at home. I felt like not to the degree which I would like to see. Like, hey, I'm fooling everybody out here, but I felt like he did pretty much own up to what he was doing.
Yep.
Okay. Let's talk about what's going on Twitter. So here we go. Let's talk about what the survivors are saying. Let's pick it up with Vetus. Vetus tweeted, impressive work by JP Cody MD on a tough puzzle and impressive cheating by Laura Moret. Kurt, was Laura Moret cheating last night?
You know what? They raised the point that Kat could just as easily have looked, or at least could also have looked. I wouldn't say just as easily because, you know, Laura kind of was in the catbird seat there, being right in the middle of the two players. Was it cheating? I'd say it was taking an advantage. Cheating is when you break the rules. She was not breaking any rules. If she had cheated, she would have been basically called out, but it was within the boundary of the rules. Kat had said that, you know, that's not how she necessarily wants to play the game. I wouldn't say that it was cheating.
So is that really the catbird seat? No pun intended to Kat Edison. But is that the place to be? Like, should we look into this like and think about like, well, who does production want to see move on? And if they're in the middle spot when there's a puzzle, is that like an advantage as opposed to being flanked out on the left side or the right side?
Well, every single challenge that's been won has been won by the person in the middle.
Yeah.
I've completely just made it up on the spot. I was wanting to give any fact checkers out there something to correct us on. But if that had been true, that every single challenge had been won by the person in the middle, then we start to see something. I think in this case where it's just a puzzle like that, it definitely gives the advantage to the person who is in the middle. But another challenge is like the arranging the numbers puzzle, you're not going to get an advantage based on where you're at. So yeah. I think it just was probably random draw and it just benefited Laura a little bit more.
Vetus also tweeted, how dare they air a shot of me taking an aqua dump? Such a personal moment.
God bless. So
I missed that. Maybe we can go back and catch that. I don't know if I want to go back and catch that on the videotape. Also, there was an interesting conversation taking place on Twitter this morning, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'll just paraphrase. But I think Vetus was saying, why didn't John knock over the puzzle? And I think John had said, well, he didn't want to ruffle feathers and for, you know, you know, people who have loved ones in the game, he didn't want to, you know, piss them off to, you know, he sort of just was like, hey, I'm just let it happen.
Yeah, I saw that exchange as well. He didn't want to, like, if he had knocked it over, then it would have been showing that he was had favoritism towards Kat over Laura because he didn't want Laura cheating necessarily. But, you know, it could have potentially done it in celebration, but I think if he wins it, steps back, sees that Laura's copying him, what his finished puzzle, and then pushes it over, it does start to show maybe that, you know, people might, Sierra might think that he's against, you know, Laura, and if Laura ends up losing, there could be bad will there, so ill will, so.
Yeah. All right, so Sophie Clark tweeted, at Sophie G. Clark, I don't think a blindside is fair equals famous last words. Do we put this in the pantheon of dumb Survivor things, what Laura Boneham did last night? Is this, or is this not even in the top 20?
I would say it's up there. I don't know if it's in the top 20.
I think it'll be pretty forgettable once we get like 2 weeks out of this. I don't think we'll be talking about the time Laura Boneham went ahead and told Vetus they were going to vote him out.
Right. It was definitely a mistake, but I don't think it was necessarily one of the top mistakes of all time. Yeah. That was a mistake for her game, and when she did it, I was asking myself, looking at the screen, wondering, did they agree on this? And we just didn't see that, and not sure enough, we learned that, nope, she kind of took that on her own.
I also saw some discussion on the interwebs, is Laura Boneham the worst Survivor player of all time? We talked about this a lot last season in context of Francesca being voted out twice, and I had my math equation came up with it that Wendy Jo was the worst Survivor player ever. Could we make a case for Laura Boneham for the worst Survivor player of all time?
I'd say definitely not.
I don't think so either. I think she's an asset in the challenge.
There were a couple challenges this season where she got specific call-outs and kudos from Jeff on her performance during the course of the challenge. Yeah. So I think that right there, she's not the... Definitely not the worst.
Not the worst. And also not the challenge where she forgot the thing they went to go get.
Right. Yeah. Although they really painted that, they almost made it seem more like that was Tina's fault, or at least during who was apologizing for it after the fact, Tina was. And Laura just kind of stayed silent there, so I'm not sure to what extent any of that came back to kind of, you know, stain her reputation as well.
Yeah. On the rewatch, though, even more hilarious what Laura Boneham did with Vetus. Like, it really was. She's like, you know, I've been crying about this all day, and I just got to tell you, the four of us, sorry, Vetus, we're gonna vote you out. So let's just enjoy the day. And he's like, well, why would that make me want to enjoy the day? She's like, well, you know, you could just, you know, relax. Like, very good.
Knowing there's nothing you can do at all.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Fishback tweeted, I feel like I can be myself, the quotes of someone right before they are booted from Survivor. Yeah, that's fair. Eliza at E. Orleans tweeted, I don't think a blindside is fair, in quotes. Huge mistake, Laura. Why would you say that? Hashtag Survivor, hashtag blood versus water. So a bunch of the New York Survivors were up in arms about Laura Boneham's quotes last night.
It sounds like, yeah, that's maybe the... Wine and Cheese Alliance is anti-Laura? Is that what we're feeling?
Wine and Cheese has soured against the Bonehams.
Yes.
We'll see. Maybe they support a different political candidate in Indiana.
You know what? As a neutral player in the Midwest, and as the Bonehams are my neighbors to the southeast of Chicago, I can't get too harsh on them.
Yeah. Hayden Moss, at Hayden underscore Moss, tweeted, Kleenex just called. I'm getting an endorsement deal. Oh, so congratulations to Hayden Moss for all his crying last night. And another Big Brother person, Ian Terry, at Tulane Terry, tweeted, Hayden convinces cat swapping is a bad idea. Vetus woos all the women on his team. Ian takes notes. So Ian is watching very closely how Hayden and Vetus handle the women of Survivor. Jervis tweets to Hayden Moss, why are you crying so much? Someone should give that kid a hug. Yeah. So Jervis is very sympathetic to Hayden. Just for you sports fans that are out there who were following the Rob Has a Fantasy Football League 3, I was playing against Team Jervis this weekend, and I had a pretty good lead going into Monday Night Football, and I had Russell Wilson, and Team Jervis had only Golden Tate to beat me, and Jervis ends up beating me by 3 points there on the back of an 80-yard play where Golden Tate had one of the worst taunting incidents in the NFL this year. So it was very quite ironic that Jervis and Golden Tate became interlocked this week. In a related story, Golden Tate's niece, it turns out, is a cheerleader for the Rams, and then the Rams actually fired her because of the taunting incident.
So star and niece, a potential blood versus water pairing down the road.
No. yeah. So Rachel Folger, Tyson's girlfriend, she tweets, is it weird to put hashtag Survivor on your resume even if you lasted only 3 episodes? This is a thing. You know, if you go on reality TV and like I'm on LinkedIn and I feel like sometimes it's weird that, you know, somebody's like, you know, people just like connect to you because, hey, I was on a reality show. You're on a reality show where now we're connected on LinkedIn. I don't feel the need to reach out to anybody that was on a reality show that I don't even know and connect to them on LinkedIn.
In terms of Amazing Race versus Survivor versus Big Brother as resume builders, though, I think at least if you were on recent seasons of Big Brother, you may want to rethink that.
It is a thing, though. If you have a resume, like what sort of like do you put something like that on your resume, and does it help you and does it hurt you? I don't put anything on my resume about being on Survivor. I feel like, but some people put like, oh, employee CBS. You know, I've definitely seen it out there. So it is a weird thing that people who, it depends, I think, what field you're in.
Yeah.
Denise Stapley writes, seriously, I hope that they're offering these couples a serious therapy discount after the season. Hashtag loyalty is tested. Hashtag regret. Is Denise giving all free services to the survivors?
I haven't, checked my Groupon listings lately, at least not for the Iowa area. So, you know, maybe there's something out there that she's offering.
Yeah. Rupert tweets, hashtag Team Tie-Dye and Laura have a shot on Redemption Island. Hashtag Survivor, do not ever count a Boneham out. Unless we were talking about a gubernatorial candidate.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything else from the live tweeters? Keith Dixon, at Keith Dixon, Keith L. Dixon. He got on my Tina Wesson impression last night. He said, I didn't know Tina sounded a lot like Russell Hantz. You know, these impressions, I feel like I just watched the Knuckleball documentary on Netflix about R.A. Dickey and Tim Wakefield. And I feel like sometimes with these impressions, you're in the bullpen and you're feeling good and you got something, and then you go out there and then you got nothing. That was like me last night trying to do a Tina. I felt like I had a halfway decent Tina earlier on in the night, and I feel like sometimes the penner is also I really struggled with my command on that one. So these impressions are not easy.
They've got like the red state blue state maps of the U.S. If somebody out there wants to create a map of the regions based on where someone's from and what accent Rob does, like you've got the South and Russell Hantz, you've got the Northeast and Boston Rob. I think Big Jeff from Big Brother is basically how you characterize the Midwest. I don't know who would be West Coast, but I think there is a map that could be put together of the impression you go to based on where someone's from.
Yeah, well, that's we sort of start in that area, and then we can tweak. So inappropriate Jeff comments. Kurt, I know you keep track of this for us. Was there anything good?
There wasn't a lot last night. I mean,
as there was a couple, like, the trick is, once you get it, how do you get out? It's really been weak this season. People going down, buffs coming off. That's really about it.
Is the Jeff Probst inappropriate comment? Is that a thing that it's just like they're just cutting that out? They don't want it in there anymore.
Like, didn't you call it to his attention in your interview with him?
I did, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I like to do that stuff." He was like, "Yeah, yeah, that's good. I like that. I'll do that sometimes."
Like, we get challenges with poles and sacks and balls, and we're all on the edge of our seat hoping he's going to say something. And then it just, this season has been disappointment after disappointment.
Yeah, it used to be good, and now it's. I wonder if it's over. Could be. No. What
the end of an era.
It's the end of an era. That's right. Let's see. This is from the exit interview with Brad Culpepper. Morty had asked me, Rob, aren't you embarrassed to have someone on the podcast who didn't even make the merge? Absolutely, always. Very, very embarrassing to have people on the podcast who don't make the merge. Yeah.
It's like a two.
Yeah. Kurt, I think that's all I got here.
Great.
Yeah. Anything else from the episode that you think we didn't hit on?
No, I think between last night's episode and I'm sure what you discussed with Eric today, probably all covered. So no, I'm definitely good.
All right. Well, lots of fun. We will work on getting a poll question. We will work on inserting our poll into what we're doing, into our business. we just need to get the poll inserted in the back end of the website.
And then people just have to submit.
Submit.
Yeah. The response.
That's like a 50 Shades of Grey type thing.
There you go.
All right. So we will work on getting that going, and so Kurt and I will figure that out. Kurt, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was
Kurt,
fun.
And are you getting warmed up for Miss Survivor come this January?
I've been thinking about it. You know, it pretty much handles itself. I thought you were going to say, are you getting ready for a Whodunit 2 Electric Boogaloo?
Was there a pickup for Whodunit 2? I don't think so yet, right?
There's been rumors. Andy Denhart at Reality Blurred had an article a few months ago about how there's been talk about it really actually being a celebrity version. I have the Whodunit 2 book downloaded to my Kindle. I haven't read it yet, but I saw Giles on TV this week, the actor, Gildart Jackson, and got me all excited about Whodunit, and so hoping that comes back next summer.
Yeah. I'm back! So I don't have a pun ready for that.
But in the meantime, yeah, Miss Survivor, ready and raring to go.
Ready to go. It's going to be an interesting season for Miss Survivor, I feel like, because I feel like we don't have a ton of candidates who are still in the mix, potentially post-merge. We'll see if somebody emerges. I feel like the Survivor Karamoan people, I think if I was going to do the odds right now, I feel like I'm probably more leaning on the Karamoan people.
Yeah, potentially. And I don't necessarily see anybody last season or this season who's going to be as gung-ho about it as our contestants last year last time. So,
well, we'll see.
We'll see.
Hey, look, the thing I say about Miss Survivor, go back and take a look at the what's happened to the Miss Survivors. 2011, Parvati wins Miss Survivor. CBS makes her the host of the CBS or Survivor Live after show. Then last year, RC, who nobody was talking about as a returning player, wins Miss Survivor. Then a couple months later, CBS is bringing her back, and if not for the injury to her dad or the heart condition, RC is back on the show this season. So for the Miss Survivor candidates, something to think about.
Yeah, it's something to be treated with with grave seriousness.
Okay, it's a thing. All right, Kurt Clark, thank you so much.
No worries, thank you.
All right, take care. Bye.
Yep, bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Kurt Clark. Great job by Kurt here doing some voicemails and playing a great game. Lots of fun here with Kurt. I know I polled you guys. Speaking of polls, I polled you guys. I wanted to know, what do you guys prefer, longer podcasts or shorter podcasts? And at least from the people who wrote back to me, it was like 95% to 5. We want longer podcasts. So I kind of feel like I think I'm going to cater to the people that are going to be the most obsessed fans of this show, as opposed to the masses or the people that are not that interested. I think that that's probably the better way to go. So we'll see if that ultimately ends up being a smart decision for me or not. But that's where I'm putting my lot, with the crazy people who finish 2.5 hour podcasts about 42 minute episodes of television. So this is, you guys are the masses. You guys are the people that we're catering to. So congratulations. If you made it this far, you know, I like to give out a hashtag so you can check in with me. Let's go with hashtag Black Widow. How about that? In honor of Francesca's Halloween costume. All right. So we've got another really good show coming up in the next couple of days. Stephen Fishback and I are going to speak with Linda Holmes, who is a part of the Pop Culture Happy Hour on NPR. It's a podcast, and she's also a blogger on the NPR Monkey See Pop Culture blog. She's been a longtime Survivor recapper and Amazing Race recapper. I think she started on Television Without Pity. So she's a really a real groundbreaking person for the kind of stuff that we do with reality TV. She wrote a blog recently about how sexism is killing Survivor. So we want to talk to her about her thoughts on basically sexism in reality TV and all sorts of other things Survivor. So that's going to be Linda, Stephen Fishback, and myself. And we're going to do that on Saturday afternoon. So I'll probably have that either sometime Saturday evening or Sunday afternoon. You are going to want to either just check out robisawebsite.com or subscribe to Rob as a podcast, robisawebsite.com/iTunes. And then we've got another big week of podcasts coming up. Of course, our Walking Dead podcast is going to be on Sunday night. If you want to catch that live, this is going to be maybe West Coast week on Rob as a podcast because of a couple different things that are going on. We have a little bit of a scheduling issue with Josh on Sunday night. So if you want to join us live, we're actually going to be doing that after the West Coast airing of Walking Dead, which is 1 a.m. Eastern. But if you want to just wait for it in the morning, it'll be there when you go to work or whatever you do during the day. That's your business. That's not mine. Then we'll talk on Monday. Jessica, Lise, and I will be talking about Amazing Race with Ryan and Abby. That's going to be at its normal scheduled time, which is at 7:15 p.m. Pacific or 10:15 p.m. Eastern. And then on Wednesday night, it's looking like we're going to, I have to make sure Steven can do it, but I have to work late on Wednesday. So it's going to be a West Coast version of Survivor Know-It-All. And I know that most of our audience is on the East Coast, but for some people, they'll be excited. So I'm sorry about that. I typically like to do it at the same time, but I just have a work obligation that I'm not going to be able to move out of the way. So looking like a West Coast Survivor Know-It-Alls this upcoming Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we're going to do it all over again. We're going to talk to, it looks like, two people. It looks like we're going to talk to the two people who don't get into the game. I'm not sure if that's going to be a double exit interview or, as they did earlier this season, we'll have two separate exit interviews in one jam-packed show. And then we're going to have we got a great guest coming up next week. It is the return of Jonathan Penner to Rob as a podcast. So we have Pennercast, I believe it's Pennercast 4 if you don't count exit interviews. So we're going to talk with him next Thursday. So lots of stuff coming up on Rob Has a Podcast. So I want to just thank you guys preemptively for all of your votes for podcast awards. I know it's a pain in the neck to do a daily vote, but you guys are very, very generous, those of you guys that do vote. So it does not go unappreciated. I really, really thank you guys for your support always with the podcast awards. And also, I doubly even thank you guys for your support using our links on Amazon.com. We always appreciate it when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. I know the holidays are coming up, and you guys are especially generous when you start doing your shopping through there and thinking of us. So we all appreciate it over here on my end. So that's going to do it for me. We've got another 2.5 hour podcast in the books. Enjoy, everybody. Hope you have a great weekend. And we'll be back over the weekend with our podcast with Linda Holmes. Take care, everybody, and have a good one. Take care. Bye.